The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
£1 million.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor All-Stars. I am your host, Shannon Gus, formerly Gates, here to preview the season with a great guest. We are going to get into all the players we currently know are playing. We're going to get into what they did on their previous seasons, why they're well-known, and maybe kind of take some predictions on how they will go in All-Stars. So to help me do that, please welcome someone I have done many preview podcasts with. It is always a blast, the great Liana Boris. Liana, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Shannon. I'm very excited to be here. And I'm very excited to, for the first time in a while, talk about players we actually know and have more than just a few words that we know about them. So I think this will give us a little bit more or maybe a better well-rounded perspective of what we can expect from some of these players.
Yeah, this is a weird one because it's like we only have just over half the cast we can talk about, but we know everything about those players because they're former contestants. So yeah, I mean, last time we had, I think, a couple more people to talk about, but some of them were just like, what do we know about John? That he was Australian. And honestly, like, that's pretty much what I know about him still now. So accurate.
That's true.
Yeah. So we have 14 players that we can talk about. And I know this is going to kind of annoy people and, like, look, me included. So I want to kind of talk about it off the bat because obviously we cannot talk about the other 10 players as, you know, a podcast network that works with Channel 10, that gets exit interviews, that gets access to people like JLP. Like, obviously, we have to work with Channel 10 and what they're trying to do with the marketing. So, yeah, there's 10 players we can't talk about. I highly recommend everyone go check out Bloomerang, which is Mike Bloom's new column on True Dog Times, which has kind of a rundown on every contestant, which is, we can't do that. Yeah, and I hope people can kind of understand that we can't do that. And I know that there's a lot of like annoyance with the network of still not releasing and we're now like 5 days out. I get it, but it's a bit of a different thing to the US. But Liana, like you kind of watching it from afar, like how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so first of all, it's different than what we see with the U.S. Survivor cast. You know, you get the entire cast is released, you get to go over everybody, and you get to see the entire makeup of the cast. So obviously, when you see something where you're only getting 14 of the 24 cast members released, it's like, why? You know, U.S. Survivor does it this way. So I think it's a little confusing, and I think especially with returning players, it makes it kind of frustrating because these players have previous relationships and, you know, we want to be able to make all of the predictions, taking into account all of those pre-existing relationships. But you know what? Like at the end of the day, I think it's important to maintain a positive relationship and they have their reasons for doing this the way that they are. So, you know what? There's no reason to get, you know, for me personally, it's like water off a duck's back. It's okay. We'll deal with what, you know, we have and try to have a really good time.
Yeah, it's hard because you can't see the full picture. Like, just looking at, like, the top of my list, we're going to talk about Nick. He's been announced. But a big part of who Nick is as a character and who he will be as a player, you would think, in All-Stars, is his relationship with blank. Like, this is, we can't talk, you know, like that. And that's important to even the characters that have been announced. There are pieces missing from the players we can't talk about. So it's a tough one. I've thought a lot about it. And I think that, you know, Australia just does it so different in the whole way that the show is constructed. I think I talked with Rob about this last season, where it being weekly and like pretty much wall-to-wall content, there are much more like storylines that you follow through. There are much more main characters and side characters, where US we can kind of follow in a more episodic way. And I feel that the US with the preseason ironically looks at it more like a sport or a game, ironically, because we have so many sports people on Australian Survivor, but it's like, here are your preseason people. We can, you know, you do some preseason content. It's much easier to be a podcaster like that, much easier to do drafts and sweeps and stuff like that, and kind of get a sense of all the players. Whereas for Australia, like, they're going to have their main characters and they're kind of showing us, you know, some really big players and leaving the other people to be a surprise. Like, I've had a lot of people ask, do you think that this will be the 14 main characters of the season? And like, I don't. I feel, to me, like these are all based on the past. Like, I think this is 85% of the big players from a casual perspective. Like, some of them may be questionable, like a Tarzan, but from the casual perspective, I think these are all really big players that you'd have to mention. Then I think they've got 15% of people, four really prominent names that they haven't announced that are kind of being left as a bit of a tease, as a bit of a surprise. And then I think all of the like more minor characters haven't been announced. So it kind of does make sense to me that these are the names they would announce from a past perspective, not necessarily how they'll go in All-Stars. But yeah, that doesn't make it any less frustrating or confusing, and it doesn't stop people from reading into it. So from a marketing perspective, you don't want super fans to be, you know, reading into your marketing, into gameplay. Like, that would be crazy.
Well, I think that's the thing, is you have to remember the people who are doing the marketing, they are not looking at it from the super fan perspective. They're not thinking, oh no, Liana's not going to be able to draft a full team because the entire cast is not announced. For them, you know, the marketing team, I love US Survivor, but I am never more hyped for like US Survivor just does not compare to AU Survivor in terms of the preseason marketing. So yes, it's frustrating we don't get to see the whole cast, but the promos are just so freaking dramatic. It's like a movie, man. I just get really, really pumped. So I don't know, maybe they know what they're doing. But at least from the way that the marketing initially is constructed, it's kind of cool. If they could just announce the rest of the cast, it would be so perfect.
And I would love if we got those promos for a lot of the unannounced contestants, because I think that like it was so exciting when we're getting these big names, these epic promos. And then it's kind of stalled because we haven't had a new name in weeks, I guess, at this point. You know, they were announcing the first eight contestants months ago. So it's kind of stalled. I think if they had like an epic promo to announce, you know, the rest of the players over the last couple of weeks, it would have continued that momentum. They don't care about the super fans. Like, you know, everyone did their drafts. It's all very, very easy to find with tribes on Reddit. But, you know, I do think from like even a casual perspective, like people want to do office sweeps and they don't know if that's the real cast. Like you see some of the, you know, the publications here, like a Punky or something saying, you know, the Survivor superfans on Reddit think they know the whole cast. And then they kind of like link to these Reddit articles and they're like, will they be correct? It's like, yes, we're correct. Okay. Like people have done their drafts. Like, no, we're not wrong about this. imagine if we were, that would be crazy after so much speculation, but no, it's not for the superfans. It is for the casuals. I still take issue with it. I still don't really understand it, but it's what we got and it's what we have to deal with.
And we're going to march on forward. We're going to have a great time.
Do you think we'll still get tweets about this, like, after talking about it for 7 minutes? I think so. I think we will. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy, friend. Possible. If you're thinking of tweeting of us about it, we've more than covered, I think, why we can't do this.
Look, fam, it's all we got. Yeah. Let's move on.
Believe me, we want to. That's the last thing we're going to say. Quick notes about the season. I mentioned it on the JLP podcast at the end, but yeah, weekly recaps happening again. Rob is my first guest. Other podcasters and players are in the mix. Exit interviews as well. So, yeah, pretty much the exact same as last season. And I've got Talking Tribal happening on Channel 10. We can kind of discuss this at the end, but those are some show notes. Very excited about the season. It's going to be an intense couple of months of covering the show.
Yeah, I'm very excited. And all of the coverage that you're going to be doing, Shannon, I can't wait to check it all out.
Thank you. Well, I'm excited to do it. Okay, let's get into some general thoughts about the season and how we feel it's going to go. Do you kind of have any, like, macro thoughts about, like, who will do well based on, like, you know, which season's coming in really well of players, or, like, what the culture of the season is going to be?
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting. So, you know, it seems like we maybe have some more players from season two and season three, less potentially from the later season, but it's kind of hard to know exactly. But overall, it's relatively balanced. And so I think that's good. I think we're not going to see, you know, one season really dominate. Although, as we know, within seasons, there can be, you know, lasting impacts from their previous game that can have negative ramifications in terms of the game moving forward. So I like that it's spread. I actually, in general, really like the cast. There are a few people I would have liked to have seen included, but, you know, we're working with what we're working with. And I think it's going to be balanced also in terms of the types of players that are there. I know that this was sort of part of the marketing for this season, but this, I don't know, somewhat artificial categorization of players into these different compartments. You have, you know, the snakes, and you have the challenge beasts, and it's going to be really interesting to see how people play into those archetypes, or if they try to break out of that, and if we see more cross-pollination.
Yeah, I'm interested because it's only four seasons of players, so there's so many people from each season, and they all played, you know, it's not like 40 seasons with US Survivor where you might even be close to someone who just played the season after you. Like, all of these people are in this very insular short-term community, so I kind of feel like season loyalty will be nothing. Like, I think that will reduce it to nothing because there's so much of it, if that makes sense. Like, for example, there was so much of Kageyan on Second Chance, and there were four Korong people on Game Changers, so those people really stuck out, and it was a big talking point. Whereas now, it can't be a talking point how many people you have in your season, because everyone does. You know, like, it's right. Back to being an even playing field, because it's almost so uneven, with all of these people having so many connections. Like, I think for every person I wrote down, I'm like, they have a lot of connections. It's like every single one of them has some sort of huge connections outside the game, inside the game. So that almost makes it redundant, which is really interesting. Should we talk snubs? Let's do it. I mean, these people haven't been announced, so I guess it's like we're kind of spoiling the cast if we say who's not on it. But I think it's fine. Who are a few of the biggest snubs not on the show?
I mean, you know, so I have sort of like my personal favorites of people that I would have liked to see. Sarah from season two, I think, is one for me I really would have liked to see. Janine from last season was a personal favorite of mine. And so those are two of the, like, the two first people that immediately stood out to me as ones I would have liked to have seen.
See, I have like a bit of a Mount Rushmore, and I can't blame any of the season four people for not coming back immediately, because I think that's 6 weeks between filming, you know, like 50 day games, which is crazy. Insane. So, like, you know, there's a reason no parent except David came back from season four. David is a madman. You know, Pia, Janine, obviously, yes. I kind of like ruled them out of contention because I never even thought they would go on. When I look at the Mount Rushmore, I think, you know, Luke, despite being a season four person, is just the face of the franchise. So that's a huge one not to have. And if All Stars was next year or whatever, like, we would think definitely have Luke. Benji. Benji is a huge one, I think. I think he's a huge male character not to have. And then the other two, Sarah, as you said, crazy that she's not in the show, and Tessa. For me, that's a bit of a Mount Rushmore kind of ruling some of the season four people out of contention.
Yeah, I think, you know, it really would have been interesting to see Chrissy play again. Michelle from season two was another person I was thinking. Sam from season three, I just personally really like.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it would have been interesting if Ross could have come back, but given the timescale and his injury, you know, that was probably out of the question.
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed him, I think, shortly before this cast went out, and he was still not in a good way in the exit interview. So that was definitely not happening. I do think that for some of the people that it didn't work out for, like, we've seen them just bring in a Luke or just bring in a Russell. Like, I do hope that there's like a season one day where, like, we do see a couple of these people come back and that they have their chance to play again. And I don't think that Australian Survivor would, you know, not be open to that, especially because I think a lot of these people, like, either said no or it didn't work out. So hopefully, like, there's still a second chance in their future.
Yeah, and it's interesting to do All-Stars after four seasons. To me, that means that we'll probably see another All-Stars or some sort of returning players season relatively quickly after this, you know. So I think that I definitely wouldn't rule any of these people out. I think for some it was timing, right? Especially, like you said, the contestants from season four. But I think for some of the other ones, they, you know, may have been called and couldn't do it. So I wouldn't count them out in the future.
Yeah, and then just talking about, like, what I think kind of the culture of the season will be, like, it's crazy the way that the show has evolved so quickly. Like, the people who played in season one played basically old school Survivor in 2016, you know?
Yeah.
And by season two, it was, like, hyper, frenetic, and strategic. And then I feel like season three and four are much more similar to what we're going to get in that they were champions versus contenders, and I feel like this is basically like a champion season in that they were literally former contestants that were touted as champions on those seasons. So I feel like kind of playing with, you know, celebrities and some returning players makes it a bit of a different thing. The challenges, I think, got way more epic, which I think they will continue for this season. Those two seasons were in Fiji. This is obviously also in Fiji. So I think if you played on season three and four, you're a lot closer to where the game will be. You know, season one, I think, have a lot to make up. Season two, I think that they were there on a gameplay level and they might be the closest to where an all-star kind of a gameplay will be. But season three and four, I feel like they have a bit of a leg up on knowing where Australian Survivor currently sits and playing into that.
Yeah, I think that that's possible. I don't know. I look at some of the players, especially from, you know, from season one and especially from season two. And I just can't help but feel like there could be some driving forces that could elevate the gameplay. However, if the general consensus is we need to get rid of some of those players, then, like you said, we could see something more akin to season two and season three versus, you know, season two. So I really think that the, you know, the way that people view each other and those relationships are just going to be so critically important for the way that the season plays out. And so that's really the main thing that I'm thinking about is how is this person going to be perceived by the other people who are playing? So when we get into the specifics, you know, I think that's something to think about.
Yeah, I think this will be much more on the level of like season two gameplay. Like there are definitely some players in this cast who I think will kind of lead the culture, and it's all-stars, mm-hmm. So it's going to be more intense. Like, I see this being like a very, very strategic season.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's going to be really strategic. I don't know much about the format, Shannon, because in terms of any twists or anything we might see, you know, I don't know how that's going to factor in, but you know, we always see some stealing of peoples and idols and all that stuff out there. And I think that these players are going to know how to leverage those types of twists to their advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I think from what I understand, it's going to be 50 days again, which is interesting because, again, season one and two played 55 days. Like, that's different. Like, that those few days make a difference. That means we need two fewer non-elimination episodes than you got in season one or two, which again changes the game. So I just feel like the game itself and the structure of it has kind of evolved over this time as well. And mm-hmm. So maybe the players will kind of have to evolve with it if you played earlier on. I think physical challenges, like I'm trying to remember back to season one and two, were they as intense as season three and four when it became like really like athletes and sport and everything like that? And I feel like that's when it became that much harder in challenges and challenges became that much more important. So I feel like there may be some, not the challenges aren't always hard, but there may be a bit of a rude awakening for some of these players, but you know, the earlier players, but then again, you know, they're playing 50 days instead of 55. So it's not that it's gotten harder, but I do think it's gotten a bit different if you played a few years ago.
Yeah. And to see if those players are able to sort of adapt. I feel good about those that are here.
Some of them
or maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe if you can. But the problem is that it's only 4 years ago, but it's also only 4 years ago. I don't know.
But that's like the most sense time we have in this whole franchise. Like that's the whole history that we have. These are the Sues and the Richard Hatches. Like these are all day ones, but it was in 2016. Like it's been one term presidency basically. So
well, and that's what it's so funny to talk about. Like, oh, are they going to be able to adapt to the new seasons? It was like yesterday is how it feels. Yeah. But like you said, there were a lot of changes that have happened. And And with that sort of, or even the way that the gameplay is perceived too by others and sort of the general attitude that people have going into the seasons, it's so chaotic. Anything could really happen.
Yeah, it really is. It's going to be an interesting one. It's just, you never get to see a season like that where people have said, you know, why don't you do season versus season as a US theme, you know, do Kageyan versus Korong, you know, and put six people from one season all on different tribes. Like, they're basically doing that, right? Like, yeah. It basically is season versus, there's so many people from each season. I think it'll make for some very strange dynamics, but let's get into talking about some of these players. And I think we're going to start, we'll go chronologically by season, but let's start with Nikai Danza, who is back on Survivor. Obviously an RHAP favorite. This is a big one. This is someone I hope we're all rooting for. If anyone gives them anything on Twitter, you give it back to them. I think that's what my official direction is fight with people on Nick's behalf if you need to. Liana, what do you think about Nick coming back?
So I don't know. Yeah. Do I have to give a disclaimer? Like, I've met Nick. Nick is so great.
He's
yeah, he's okay. You know, I think that he's a player who's in a very, very interesting spot because, you know, when you look at him in sort of a bubble after season one, he has this, you know, he's the snake. What a snake. What a liar. He's always scheming. And now after, like we've talked about, the seasons have sort of changed and the gameplay has changed and adapted. He's now, it's curious to me how he's going to be perceived. Is he still going to be looked at as such a big snake and such a big threat when you have other people that we'll talk about later, like Harry, who maybe so in terms of the snake characteristics may stand out so much more. Yeah. So I think that is one thing that's super interesting about Nick.
Yeah, I want to give a bit of a rundown on these players for anyone who hasn't like seen these seasons or is trying to like refresh their memory. So yeah, what is Nick known for? The first thing I have is being a snake, but not really. Mm-hmm. That was the second right. thing I have is not really. Like, why was Nick a snake other than being a super fan right. and looking like he was sneaky? Like, yes, the whole moral dilemma thing. He had a moral dilemma. He took the clue. Instead of doing it for the tribe, but he did intend to tell his allies. It's just like they didn't give him an inch. Like, he couldn't be even a tiny bit necessarily deceptive, even with being truthful to his alliance, because they just were out not to trust him. And I think he probably put people off by being like so passionate and energetic, and this was his thing, and he was a super fan, and like, you know, he'd had the 21st birthday themed Survivor, which is like, you know, we've all had something like that. You know, he was the voice of the people. But in terms of what he was bringing to season one, like, he was playing in a culture that did not accommodate for that. If he played in season two, it might have. But in season one, yes, you had your extreme superfans. You had your Nick, you had Evan, you had Dez, you had Matt. Like, these people are extreme superfans, but the culture was really driven by, like, Lee, for example, which was so anti-strategy. So it was just the worst possible environment for him, and I think made him stand out as, like, the snake and the sneaky player that he wasn't hugely so. And I think that's coming to light in a lot of the marketing.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually went back and rewatched some of season one in preparation for this, and I had the exact same reaction that in my head I had remembered it differently, you know, because, oh, at the time in comparison to what was going on in season one, like, yeah, he was the snake, but even just look at AK from the next season, and Nick is so tame, and he's just there to like, yeah, okay, yeah, he does go looking for idols and things like that, but yeah, he just seems so, I don't, normal is not the right word, but somehow just the innocent super fan, like, out there just trying to play. And I think that, you know, that's really interesting. And the fact that he received at least one vote at every tribal council he attended is pretty insane.
Yes, I actually know that was a goal for Nick going out there, is to go to one tribal council without receiving votes, which is a sad story. Like, that's a sad goal. But I hope so much that he gets it.
I believe in him. I hope that he's able to achieve that. You know, he's also had some personal growth within the last couple of years. He's married now. He's got a kid. And so it'll be interesting to see how that sort of change in perspective alters, if at all, the way that he approaches the game.
I think it definitely will. And I was looking at all these players and I wrote in my notes, like, no one has had more growth than Nick. And I was like, well, maybe I just don't know the other people personally, which is also possibly true. But like, look, it's only been, you know, 3 and a bit years since he played. And in that time, to get married, to have a kid, and to evolve from what he was. Like, he had his super fan dream. He went out there. He found an idol. Like, he ticked some things off the bucket list. And he did evolve past it. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, Nick gave you the podcast because he was going on All Stars. Like, truly not. I don't know if people will believe that, but I think it's important to where he was when he got the call was that he'd already given me the podcast. He was out. Like, he loved the show, but it didn't really define him anymore, which must be nice. I'm interested in what that must be like to not be defined by the show. But yeah, he'd given me the podcast and he'd moved to a place where it was like, I'm happy to enjoy it, but I don't want it to be my whole life. I have a kid now. I want that to be my thing. And I think that's how he's coming into the game. Like, that's how he's coming into All Stars as the dad. Like, hopefully he can be kind of cool, more chill dad Nick rather than being the intense super fan again, that even though there are more players like that who might work with that, and I hope that that happens, it still might put some people off, especially with his reputation.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the biggest thing. How is he perceived by the other players? And if this reputation of the snake persists into how he is perceived, I think that's, I'm really nervous for him based on that. But I have faith that he's going to be able to, one, you know, convince people or show other people that, yes, he has undergone all these life changes. He's got so many other things to talk about in his life. I think that's going to be really positive. And then also just in comparison to some of the other, you know, snakes that are on this season, I think that he, by comparison, will look like less of a threat.
I do hope so. I think it's hard for him to win because I think that, like, the snake aura will always, like, kind of loom large over him, and, like, you're not going to really let that get to the end. But I don't think he's anyone's, like, first priority to get rid of. And as I've said, like, in every single person I've written down that they have connections, but I do think he's really well connected. Obviously, he did the podcast. He bonded with some people there. He's got, like, Adelaidean friends, Henry, AK. I can see, like, a lot of the big gamers, your Harrys and your Davids, kind of working well with him. He's got all those season one girls who I think are natural allies for him. Like, I think he has connections. I can't imagine them coming out and being like, Nick has to go first. Like, in what world is he the biggest snake and, like, the biggest priority?
Yeah, I completely agree. I hope that he's able to work closely with those that, you know, that he knows. My concern is that he's good friends with all the other really strategic players.
Yeah.
And so if that, you know, if they start going at each other, I think then, you know, maybe later on in the game, I think that could be a problem. But yeah, he's got those season one connections, which I actually think is really important. And I think that hopefully he'll be able to utilize those to his best advantage.
And how much is, like, the podcast going to come into, like, you know, like, because we're saying, like, there are connections through that, but maybe other people think that, and maybe they overstated. It's like, well, he must know everyone. I kind of don't want that to happen because it sounds bad for him, but I kind of do want it to happen because, like, it would be great PR for the podcast. I hope if that happens, they shout it out by name. But I think that largely it will be a good thing. I think he's got some friends. Like, I don't know. Why am I being optimistic about it? That's not like me, but I just, like, have so much hope in my heart.
I'm so here for this tinfoil hat conspiracy theory that it wasn't because he was going on All Stars. It's because he knew eventually he was going to go on All Stars. So he gave up the podcast to lessen the threat level of him having connections.
Yes.
See, it all makes sense now.
He gave up the podcast like 2 hours into a voicemail podcast that he did. So definitely the cast, like the cast did think he was still doing the podcast surely when they went out. I really hope it doesn't hurt him. But if it does, guys, if you're targeting Nick because he was on the podcast, please shout out RHAP in particular. I hope it gets, you know, subtitled. People can be like, what is that? Come to the podcast. And I think that would be worth it for me.
I completely, yeah, right, exactly. If he has to be targeted, at least let's bring some people over to RHAP.
I think I now want him to be targeted because that sounds like just great. Great PR for the podcast. So for Nick, I could see him making the merge. I don't see him winning, but I'm higher on him than I should be as like a pessimistic person.
Yeah, I can see that. I think he'll make the merge. I can see him going. He's definitely not going to go early, I think, just based on his connections. And I think he's, like you said, not the biggest threat out there. But for him to pull out the win, that's going to be mighty tough.
And we're just so excited. Like, I hope that the whole podcast is so excited for this. Like, Nick is on Survivor. Like, honestly, like, I've said it on multiple podcasts now that it makes me emotional that I get to talk about him on the show because I would not be having this conversation with you if it weren't for Nick. And I never forget that. Like, you know, I was his intern and, like, he called me up one night, was like, I want you to come on the podcast, which was, like, so so unnecessary. And he like took a leap of faith on me, and like he's a teacher as well, and I honestly feel like he's been like such a mentor to me. I can tell how great a teacher he must be, because he just gives off that vibe, and he's very important to me, and I genuinely just can't handle watching him. But I'm also so excited and so super proud of him, and that's all I'll say on that. I'm just so excited for Nick.
Oh, that's cute. I like it.
Let's talk about two people we want to talk about in tandem a little bit, and that is Brooke and Flick. Let's start with Brooke, but what they're known for is very, very similar. You know, they kind of ran the game together. Brooke, I would say, more the alpha of that pair. She ran the game socially. I would say she was a great, great player, and maybe a very underestimated player from that sense. But then she was betrayed by Flick right at the end in one of, I think, the biggest betrayals that the game in any international franchise has ever seen. You know, this would be like Steven backstabbing JT, which he never got a chance to do. That's literally what it was like. They were so tight. It was Brooke and Flick the whole time, and Flick turned against Brooke. But I think that Brooke especially is like such a good player. I could see her doing really well.
Yeah, I have really high hopes for Brooke. I think she's definitely going to be underrated. I think she has sort of a poverty type game. She is a challenge beast, but I think she's got a great social game. One thing that does concern me a little bit for her, I think she only went to two tribal councils before the merge. So, you know, sort of that early experience, just because she was on such dominant tribes, she doesn't really have going into early tribal councils. But, you know, she's somebody who I think can really build some strong relationships. And because I think some of these people maybe aren't going to know who she is, I think that actually is going to work to her advantage.
Yeah, definitely some people do not watch season one who are playing again, right? Like, I think it's helpful for a lot of these season one players having been like that far away. Like, if that, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons for when you played, but is anyone thinking about Brooke? Like, she was a really good player. I would say, you know, top two players of her season. We'll talk about the top one soon, but she's effortlessly social. She kind of like commanded that whole group with just being a social butterfly and really connecting with people. So I think people won't remember. I think like someone like a Nick could remember having played with her, but I don't think she's going to be on anyone's radar as much as she should be, because she is such a good player.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I go back and I look at that move where Flick does blindside Brooke, you know, Brooke started by trying to make the move against Lee and L and getting rid of Aganoa and taking the four old Sinapu further. And I mean, that was the right strategic, I mean, for her, that was the right strategic move. So I trust that she is able to make the correct strategic decisions. And, you know, Flick turning on her was something that, you know, if you're Brooke, how do you see that? So I don't necessarily fault her for that. And so I'm really excited to watch her play again, because I want to see more from her.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder if like some of the social things would have grown a bit, like especially the way that it was, like the way Nick was treated, not to put that all on Brooke. Like a lot of these players, it was like they were very much like the popular group. They didn't face a ton of adversity, as you said, like no pre-merge tribal councils, basically. And then to go to the merge and just run the game on lock, you know, so how much will she kind of grow from that and be able to work with maybe different personality types and with some adversity thrown at her? But at the same time, the way that that group gonged the others, you know, Matt and all of them, like they all thought they were at the top largely with Brooke, and they weren't. So to pull the wool over so many people's eyes so that you can kind of execute a flawless begonging, a lot of the credit needs to go to her. And that was like extremely well done.
Yeah, I think if she's able to do something similar and sort of get ahead early and build this contingent of people that she'll work with, I don't think anybody is going to be thinking like, oh, you know, remember Brooke? She pulled the wool all over so many people's eyes, so we got to watch out for her. I think they're going to fall for it again. And I think she could very easily build that group of people. Like you said, they didn't face a lot of adversity, though. So if she's on the outs and if she's unable to really get that group of people, that's where it's going to be interesting to see her interesting position to see her play from, because we haven't necessarily seen that yet.
Yeah. And it's not just even playing from the bottom. Like it's like if you have a group, like there's no way a group is just going to stick together through this game. True. So it's like you have a group that's breaking up. And like even if you're not voted out, or, you know, like how do you handle that? I just think we've seen one type of play style from her, which was to lead the game in this really social way extremely well. But how would she go with different play styles with a way more competitive field? I'm interested to see that from a lot of these season one players, but especially Brooke, who did that play style so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's how she was able to be dominant. And so when now you're not dealing with these super loyal people, right, is she going to be able to handle that? How will she respond to that type of adversity?
Yeah. And to move to Flick a little bit, you know, she was right there with Brooke, but I think like Brooke gets more of the credit. But I think like Flick, you know, she was a good player. She still voted correctly every single time until she was voted out. I think the problem with Flick, and it's kind of like what we had with Abby last season, it's like, who do you credit her moves to? When she turned on Brooke, was that strategic? Was it emotional? Did Elle lead that? So it's very much an Abby thing. It's like strategy versus emotion and not really knowing how to kind of quantify what that person is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, part of it is because I think, you know, like you said, talk about who's sort of responsible, like JL really is able to get in Flick's head and, you know, you're at the bottom. And then Flick's like, oh, I want to be that person to make that big move. So is it something that was truly motivated by, I think that this is legit the best strategic move for me, or I need to put something on my resume? Although, to be honest, in this sort of era now of Survivor, maybe that style of gameplay will be okay if she's sort of being more bombastic and going out there and making these big moves where things are so fluid and so chaotic. Maybe it's not so necessary that she stick to something that's more rigid. But I mean, she was able, you know, I think she came in fourth during her season, so she was able to make it a little bit further and make it quite close to the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think people kind of saw her as a little naive, like to see her be controlled by like the bigger sister characters, like your Brooke and your Elle's. But I just think that she probably has grown a lot also. Like, it's also been 3.5 years since she played, the maximum amount of time people have had to play. So I think that she could have like most improved. Actually, I'm pretty high on how she can do. A lot of these like young female contestants, I think that they're going to have like a parabolic rise in the game. And my husband was like, I don't think you're using that right. But I was like, this is how I see it. Like a parabola graph, which apparently can be much more complex, but at its simplest is like a U shape. Right. And that's how I see a lot of these women. Some of the women we can't even talk about, where it's like the variance is exactly what Pia described it as. I'll be out first or I'll win. Maybe not so extreme, but it's like you could be one of the contender women who go super early and basically aren't on the season. But if any one of those women survives, like who's getting rid of them for the next several episodes, you know, and then they're probably at the very end. So I kind of see that for Brooke, for Flick, for, you know, some of these other female contestants. That's kind of the structure of Australian Survivor. I don't know how much All Stars will play with that, but that's kind of how I've always seen that for them.
Right. And I think something that is benefits these two players, Brooke and Flick, is that they are strong players in terms of physical strength. And, you know, Brooke maybe more so than Flick. But I think that both of them you look at and, you know, oh, they're clearly not the weakest person on your tribe if you're trying to get rid of somebody just based on physical strength. I don't think they're going to be targeted early because of strategic strength. So I think that based on those two criteria, I think they will be able to actually make it further in the game. Now, if they really try to, oh, you know, like let's say Flick comes in and says, I have something I have to prove. I'm going to go all out and go crazy. That might get her in trouble. But I think if she's sort of able to maybe kind of play on any type of preconceived notions that people have from season one, except for maybe, you know, voting out your best friend, I think that that will help her because she won't be necessarily perceived as that big threat.
Yeah, I mean, from a physical standpoint, they are both really fit. I think Brooke is like a personal trainer, but I still think I don't love the way that it looks to be just like a young, smaller female on Australian Survivor. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, someone like Tarzan, you know, maybe less fit, but he's got brute strength. I mean, they literally were doing like tug of wars, you know, so I don't know if people will see them as weaker because you say like they're not the weakest on the tribe. And I totally agree. But there's not a lot of weak people in this cast physically.
That's
true. It's a very, very strong cast. There are Olympians. There are, you know, just by not being a professional athlete, you might be seen as the weakest and not by being like a big, strong man. So I do worry physically more for Flick than for Brooke. But for both of them, just to be like, well, how are you, you know, lifting massive blocks, which is basically all the challenges that they have in the early game of Australian Survivor. I do think that there are concerns there, which is so uncool and so unfair because these are fit women. And I still don't think that Australian Survivor really helps them. But in terms of like their relationship and being like one of the biggest betrayals in the history of the franchise, which has been kind of hyped up a lot in the marketing. Like, does anyone still care about that? Like even Brooke and Flick, no. Like, do they care? Like this was 3.5 years ago, right? The maximum amount of time that we have since season one, you know, to have played the game. I don't know if anyone's going to be looking at Flick like that, even if Brooke will be looking at Flick. Like, surely this is water under the bridge.
I think so, because I think they're pretty tight post-season. So I think they've, you know, been able to get over. Yeah, there's no animosity here. And I think also the players that are playing in these, you know, in the later the players from the later seasons that are coming back. That's not the first thing that pops into their mind. Like, oh, but remember the, you know, when Flick turned on Brooke. I don't think that that is really going to hold them back.
And almost every single player has a grievance with someone on the season. Maybe not as big a betrayal as Brooke and Flick, because I honestly think that that's pretty much the pinnacle. But like, yeah, you know, everyone has a grievance, and they're probably a lot more recent. So, and they're probably not as good friends in real life. I mean, I just assume they're still friendly. I honestly think it's fine, but I think I can see a lot of growth from Flick. I think Brooke is a really good player. Effortlessly, I think Flick has the potential to be also really great. And I have really high hopes, actually, for both of them.
Yeah, I do. I do, too. I co-sign that.
Okay, well, let's move on to Phoebe, who is known for being the queen strategist of her season, which is amazing. She found idols, she played them, she got Rowan to give her his idol and vote himself out, which, you know, JLP compared her to Parvati, and that might be, like, the biggest move in terms of that. Like, what she achieved is phenomenal. She was pre-merge, and she lasted 31 days. This is the insanity of Australian Survivor. And, you know, we talk about how Brooke and Flick maybe didn't face as much adversity and didn't go to really any pre-merge tribal councils and just had the game on lock. If you're wondering where the adversity was, it was with Phoebe, hanging out with her, because she went to, like, all of the pre-merge tribal councils. All of her tribe sucked. She got screwed by so many different twists. It's like, where do you start? Like, the first twist was that the tribe that won the challenge would get to decide the tribes that played out for the rest of the entire pre-merge. So they just decided, like, the strongest possible tribe. And then they left all the weaker people to lose together for weeks and weeks. And somehow she got through that. She was in the minority there, idled some people out, voted out some other allies, like, got into, you know, the cracks. Incredibly well done. Then there was another twist where Chrissy was going to be voted out, but instead there was a kidnapping, and JLP kind of hyped up how great Phoebe was. And then Chrissy was, you know, Sue was kidnapped instead of Phoebe, so then she got voted out in the tribal council before the merge. Like, what a horribly sad trajectory. But she accomplished so much. Like, she fought through so much adversity, and I think she is, like, really an amazing player.
She played so much game, even just in that string on Vavao when she's just constantly going to tribal council. I mean, talk about experience for being pre-merge. It's, like, insane to me, from convincing Rowan to play his idol on her, which then ultimately sent him home. Mm-hmm. Then she goes idol hunting, finds Craig's idol without the clue, just because she's smart enough to see Craig constantly going to this area. She's like, there must be something over there. So she's able to do that. She's able to throw, you know, Andrew under the bus to stay alive. She plays an idol for herself correctly. Like, it still baffles my mind to remember that she was pre-merge, just because she has so much experience. And so, looking forward to this season, I think that experience is going to be so incredibly helpful. I mean, she has been through the ringer on season one. And so I think anything that this All-Star season throws at her, she will be very prepared to deal with.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to AK, who we'll talk about, where they were both pre-merge, but they both played like a month of the game and went through so much. They were both twist screwed and swap screwed, and, like, you know, all of that. Like, they had so much experience. Like, they played more Survivor in a pre-merge game than most people probably will play in a lifetime. And she handled so much of it so well. Like, honestly, if she just had a couple of those moves, it would be enough. But she really did get through so much. Like, if they had just merged one earlier, like, she would have, you know, she would have had such a long run in the game. She was probably going to reconnect with Ellen Lee, who ended up going to the final three, who were her allies from Aganoa. So she just has, I mean, not enough can be said about how well she did in season one and what, like, a naturally great player she is. She's obviously really smart. And I think, like, as we've said, like, season one was a long time ago. Will people be thinking about it? I think for Phoebe, yes. Like, for Phoebe of all people, in that I think she was the best player in that season, probably, like, the name that you think of from that season in terms of players. Like, I do think there's no expiration date on, like, the threat of Phoebe's name.
Yeah, and that's what really concerns me. Because if that's what is going to hang over her head, ooh, yikes. I worry that she's going to be targeted early. I think, like you mentioned, there's so many strong people on this season, Olympians, for goodness sakes. And Phoebe may stand out also just for simply not being some sort of professional athlete. Like you said, I think her, you know, talk about quote unquote weaker people physically, she's the one who really stands out for me. So unfortunately, that coupled with the fact that she is such an amazing strategic player really makes me nervous. But she's a strong social player too, and so I think if she's able to really just make connections and focus on building bonds, she might be able to sneak by and have a deep run in the game.
I just don't see where she's ever gonna get a break. Like, you know, like for someone like a Brooke or a Flick, it's like maybe at the beginning you're kind of fighting harder, but then you kind of get to chill. Like, no one's really taking you out like at the beginning of the merge. Like for Phoebe, I think she's like slightly weaker at the beginning, and then I think like even when it gets to the merge, like she's still a huge threat. So I can't see a point where people are like, we don't need to worry about Phoebe right now. Like, she's always going to be have something that are going to make people want to vote her out. And when I say like, you know, these women are weaker physically, like that's a crazy thing. They're all super, super strong, but it's just about,
yeah,
who can win tug of war. And she has like really, she's very ingrained in the cast community, I feel like, not just with her season, but kind of across the board. And I'm not sure if that's like a good or a bad thing. Like, I think she'll have connections, but it might seem like she's like almost too in it, but everyone has connections. Yeah. So I don't know.
I don't know. So that's what I guess I'm trying to understand is, okay, what is, I don't know, Matt Rogers or Lockie's perspective of Phoebe? You know, what do they think about her?
I think they probably see her exactly like a Parvati. You know, like she was the vixen. You know, if they know one takeaway about her, I think that she's threatening enough where it's like kind of overcome the fact that Lockie could know who she is. Lockie may actually know her from real life, but like someone like a Matt Rogers, who probably didn't watch her season, like I think it probably transcends that it's like she's the Parvati, and that name just like, you know, Molly was the Parvati, as we spoke about. Like, it's hard to be the Parvati, and that's who Phoebe is.
Mm-hmm. I think also let's say there's a section of the cast that doesn't know who she is, and one person says something about her, that's the term, that's the descriptor that they really latch onto. So if it is, oh, she's the Parvati, and then that just quickly gets propagated because it's the only thing that they know about her. So it's the only thing that they can sort of latch onto. And, you know, it's really hard. There's no complex narrative for her unless she's really able to build social bonds and sort of get past that. But that's quite a hurdle that she'd have to jump over.
Yeah, I do have here like my overall takeaway is like, if anyone has the skills to overcome her reputation, like I think she actually does, but it's a long game. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't make her my winner.
Yes.
Like, the way I feel about these three women is like, in terms of, they're all of good enough players, but like in terms of quality of play style, like Flick's the worst, then Brooke, then Phoebe. But then also like Flick is like the least threatening, and then Brooke and then Phoebe. So it kind of works in the same way. So it's kind of like balancing that threat level versus like the skills for the game.
Right, exactly. I can see them all going out like back to back to back because of that sort of balance. And it's going to be interesting too to see, we talk about connections, if Brooke, Flick and Phoebe all, you know, from season one, and Nick as well, of course, how strong are those bonds? Is it going to be, okay, you're out here with people that you know, are you really going to gravitate towards them? And so depending on how the tribes are made up and how the swaps end up going, all of that could, I mean, it really just depends on luck if you're sort of able to keep your contingent together.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Phoebe does really well. It's really cool to see her alongside, you know, when they put out all these like big male contestants and your Davids and your Henrys and everything, and mm-hmm. you always have Phoebe there with it. And that is great to have. And they should do more of that. But Phoebe is just, what she represents is amazing.
Yes, I'm excited for her to play. Nervous, but excited.
Well, let's move on to season two. And we'll start with the winner of season two, which is Jericho. So he was known, obviously, for winning the game. Through, you know, he had this like cookie thing where he was, you know, giving people cookies in the dead of night, which was hilarious, kind of eating cookies behind people's back, which ended up being like this massive strategic thing. And like, he brought it up at Final Tribal Council, and then he wore like a Cookie Monster bow tie to the reunion. So it really was a big part of his game. He was like Luke's original partner. He ran the game with Luke and Sarah, I think, until it kind of all fell apart, but then he managed to make it through with some very sly tricks. And I think Jericho is really underrated. Like, I think he played the best winning game from Australian Survivor. I would say Pia is the best player of the winners. overall. But I do think in terms of his game, like, he didn't have as big a blind spot as Pia did at the Simon vote. I think these are really the only two games I'm kind of comparing when I asked for the best winning game. And, you know, I think he had higher, like, flashier individual highs than Pia did. And one of those was, like, convincing Tara to vote with him at the final four so he could make fire. And really just, like, saving himself from the brink of game death. You know, Final Trouble Council is a bit of a low point in terms of, like, how he speaks. But I think he is a really good player. He played a really great game to win. He has a lot of endurance strength as well. So I really do actually rate Jericho as a player quite highly.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's hard also when your partner in crime is somebody like Luke to really stand out, just because Luke is such a powerhouse when it comes to character and personality. But Jericho was off doing stuff on his own, you know, especially like you said at the Final Four, to then go on win the fire making tiebreaker and able to make it to the final two. I think that is really impressive. And I think he was always there. He was perceptive and he knew what was going on. And picking Luke as a partner in crime, I thought was also a really great decision. And so if he can find somebody else who could, you know, be his Luke on this season, I think that's going to be really good for him. In terms of, you know, the pre-existing relationships, he did vote out some of the contestants on this season. So whether or not there's any bad blood from that, I don't think so. But just the fact that he's a previous winner makes me really nervous for him on this season.
Yeah, I mean, to have two previous winners on a cast that are otherwise non-winners, it just feels like so easy that they would be targets. I mean, you're never going to forget the name of a winner. It's such an easy early fodder target to come around to. And we'll talk about Shane as well. But for Jericho, it's like he's not winning Tug of War. He is a big challenge beast in terms of what individual challenges will become with endurance. So that in itself is threatening. And I don't know if he's going to be able to kind of rally if that's kind of coming against him. I do think he has skills for the game, but it's like, that is a lot of target on you, I think, pretty early on, it should be.
I think also remembering that there are 24 contestants is something important to keep in mind, because when you're trying to rally to target somebody, and it's like, I mean, it's like this even with smaller tribes, though, you know, the first name, nobody wants to be first. And so the first name that gets thrown out is sort of easy to latch on into and gravitate to. But when you especially have so many more people, having one thing that just immediately makes you stand out. And so I don't know the tribe divisions, but assuming that Jericho is on a tribe, you know, without Shane, he's the only winner on that tribe. And that makes me super, super nervous that he might be out early. But if he can flip it and he's able to stay, I think even past one or two tribal councils, he's just such a fun social person that, I was going to say, I can't imagine people voting him out, but then I'm like, oh, he's a freaking winner and he's like a good player. So yeah, of course they're going to vote him out. I'm nervous for Jericho.
I agree with you. It's like, if he gets some time, he can probably pull something crazy. If he gets a cookie in his hand, he can probably pull something crazy. Yeah. But we see it all the time and like in so many different seasons. It's like early on, no one wants to be first or within the first couple. So you're saying like, what is other? And unfortunately, the way that manifests in newbie seasons is like you're old or you're a different demographic or whatever it is to kind of differentiate someone as other to just put it all on them and vote them out early. So when I see Jericho and Shane, I'm like, there, that's a huge other. The only two winners in a season of 22 other non-winners. You know, we saw with Australian with the original All-Stars. That was a big point of contention. Tall poppy syndrome is literally like an Australian culture, right? Like you want to cut down people who've had success. So there's probably a bit of that as well, especially when both Shane and Jericho are playing with so many other people that they outright beat. And I do think Jericho has good relationships. And I do think a lot of that would be watered out of the bridge. But it's just kind of like, it's not a bitter thing, but it's like, you already won. You beat me. You did it. You got $500,000 and you're not winning tug of war. And it's like, well, why do I need you right now? And I don't know what the answer is for that, for Jericho or Shane, other than like, you like me, right? Like, you know, and that can help, but it's a big glaring otherness for both of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. Because what does Jericho come with and sell to the people? You know, the other players, cookies? Like, why should you keep me? Exactly. Yeah.
Like stuff them in your pocket.
Like I'm really fun. And here I'll share all my cookies with you. You know, unless he can get one of those moral dilemmas early on, Jericho might be out early.
And you can't even be like, look, I'm a threat, but I'm also a shield for you. Because just like optically, like Jericho and Shane don't really look like big shields. Like if you're going to want a shield, it's going to be like Matt Rogers or David or Henry. Like, they seem like threats who are shields, whereas like Jericho and Shane just are threats who are possible physical liabilities early, who also beat you and won in a society that loves like Paul Poppy syndrome. So like just saying it out loud for them, that's not great.
Right, when we're looking at the pros cons column, yes, we see a lot more in the cons, unfortunately.
Yes, there's a lot of Jerry cons. I don't have a pun for Shane. Do you? Shane's a hard one to make. We needed Mike Bloom. I'm sure Bloomerang has a pun about how Shane's gonna go. But yeah, really, really tough one, I think, for Jericho. Let's move on to someone I think also has a bit of a tough ride coming in, and that is AK. So AK is known for being another snake. And I kind of also want to ask, like, why are all my friends snakes? Like, you know, in the way this is marketed, the people I'm actually friends with are always snakes. I want to be friends with the heroes now. Like, come on. So he's known a lot from the Phoebe perspective. You know, pre-merge, played so much game. He went from the absolute bottom to the top. Like, he was dead to right on Summertale. Don't even know how he made it out there. Kind of found his people, found a crack, made the Summertale 5, and then ran the whole pre-merge. Was completely screwed by a twist that made his arch-enemy Tara, like, he voted her out without even knowing. Like, they didn't tell them before, like, she's going to exile. Like, he voted her out. She and Annalise went to Asanga, told Luke that AK was the devil. Luke, and then AK got swap-screwed to be with Luke and his former allies, or, you know, former enemies. And he was voted out, and we were very sad, and I wrote a song about it at the time, about how upset I was. So, yeah, he had a massive, massive run in the game.
Yeah, this is the person that I always think of when I'm sort of thinking about the new snakeness, the, like, hotness, but, like, snakeness. I don't know. It's always AK, because he just, you know, because how many days did AK play? It must have been something similar, about 30.
Yeah.
Right. So for playing and going out in the pre-merge, similar to Phoebe, he just did so much. And I think that that is something that's going to hang over him. I think he's still known as being a snake, super strategic player, being willing to make fake idols, come up with the chicken idol, you know, coming in with the mentality that you can't win unless you're going to make these big moves. I mean, that is AK. And I don't see that changing coming into this All-Star season. And I'm really nervous for him. The classic AK moment that I just absolutely love is when he's trying to talk strategy with Tara while she's puking in like the first episode or whatever. If that's the AK that we see back, I'm real nervous for him.
I think he's like disputed, like, how, anyway, what we saw was that he was trying to talk to her while she was vomiting. Like, for people who forget what the chicken idol was, which is like kind of gone down in Australian Survivor lore, it's episode 2. So that's exactly when you want to need to do desperate plays. That's the point that AK was in episode 2. He made the chicken idol, which from memory was an idol that was meant to look so fake, and it was fake, that no one would assume that he had an actual real idol, which he did. So that's some like next level thinking coming off the back of season 1, which was like so, you know, so low down in terms of strategy. And then you had AK, like, you had someone like AK and Henry come on to season 2. You're like, okay, we've just jumped ahead like 35 seasons. And then that's what AK really brought. Like, he really was at the complete bottom. And it wasn't just the strategy, it was also the social connections to make the Summertale 5, which were like this unbreakable 5, to pull people away, to pull like Peter away from his allies and Tara. He kind of found Tess, who was on the bottom. You know, he had a connection with Jared from the start, and then he had Ziggy as well. So he formed this group, and they really did run the pre-merge, and they took this really dominant alliance led by Lockie, who we'll talk about, and they've had them under their thumb. And if it weren't for twists, and if it weren't for swaps and stuff, like, that alliance would have been completely decimated. They did vote out Annalise and Tara in the space of one night. They just didn't go home. So he just ran that tribe so well. And what he accomplished was, again, like, completely incredible. But like you said, like, people don't forget that. AK is a name like Phoebe where that doesn't die. Like, that name is still huge. I think people will still remember it. I have very, very, very big concerns for him early. You know, because he kind of reveled in not helping with camp life, you know, physically. I have concerns. Like, is he winning tug of war? I'm not so sure. But, like, is he someone they're keeping around from a strength-based perspective? Concerns. Extreme concerns. Because, like, he was fighting against Lockie as the alpha male. And then they introduced champions versus contenders as a theme. And we have, like, more athletes now on the season. I feel like that's not a good vibe for him.
No, I really don't think it is. And I just, this is completely made up in my brain, but I just have this feeling like Lockie is just totally having a grudge against AK for being blindsided. And he is going to be out there just preaching to anybody who will listen about how we have to get AK out. We have to get AK out. We have to get AK out. Like, he is this super strong strategic player. And oh man, if more of those champions along with Lockie and whomever else are able to get together and target AK, like, that is bad news bears for him.
Yeah, and we're not going to talk about the tribes because we're not allowed, but I just want to say one thing about the tribes. If I can say one thing in this whole podcast, is like, the tribe setup is terrible for AK. That's just like the one person where I looked at the tribes and I was like, oh my god, that's not a good vibe for AK. So I'm not going to talk more about it, but honestly, if I can get like a one get out of jail free card to talk about the tribes, it's bad for AK. Yeah, big concerns. Worrying concerns. I really love AK as well. Another personal anecdote about these people that I love. AK was my third ever podcast guest. It was Mike Bloom, then Henry, and then AK came on to the week 2 Survivor New Zealand podcast, and the podcast did not record. The only time that has ever happened to me, it was my worst moment in podcasting and maybe in my life. It was so bad, and I was like, I think I'll just quit podcasting for good right now. But AK was so nice, and we re-recorded the podcast the next day, and like, he just like is such a good soul. Like, I honestly think back on how kind he was in that terrible moment, and like, he's just a great person as well. And so, I mean, true for a lot of these people, but like, these contestants should be so lucky to get to know AK. I hope that they give him a chance and really do kind of hang with him socially, but there's so many issues there for him. There are natural allies as well. Like, Nick and AK surely are going to run this thing. Like, Harry's of the world, I think Harry and AK are kind of seen as like the equivalent people. I could see those kind of like snake connections forming, and they've been grouped together as snakes, but will he get the chance to kind of work with those people?
Yeah, that's on, like, fingers crossed, that's kind of what I'm hoping. If his tribe can win a couple early on, I think that's going to be really helpful. And then if he can make these connections with these quote unquote other snake players, because I think that there is going to be an element of self-preservation early on for those types of strategic players. When you have people like Lockie and Matt Rogers out here, I think that you kind of just by necessity almost feel like you need to work together early on. And I'm really hoping that he's able to then make something of that if that does happen, and then go deep. But yeah, fingers crossed for AK.
It's hard as well when your rivalry is with someone who's in such a easier place than you early on. Like, Lockie doesn't have a lot to worry about early on. In fact, we can kind of just skip a bit and kind of talk about Lockie next, because he is so connected to AK. But like, Lockie is a massive physical force. He's got like a lot of athletes I could see really kind of vibing with him. Like, if he's coming for AK, you're siding with Lockie, right? Like, he's the one winning you rewards and probably like immunity challenges. Like, you would go with Lockie. Even if you're someone who'd rather work with AK, I feel like the culture of the tribe and kind of the sense of the tribe would be going with someone like a Lockie. So, tough stuff for AK.
Yeah, and Lockie is such an alpha male. One saving grace for AK might be if the alpha males start to butt heads. That could be something that that could help save AK, because then, you know, it's more about the two alpha male groups going after one another, and then AK can hopefully slide under the radar and potentially be a part of that. Also, because even though I have made up in my mind that Lockie's super bitter about it, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe this could be water under the bridge. Maybe they could work together. I don't know. Don't think so, but maybe. You never know.
Maybe.
And yeah, that could be a way it shakes out that could be beneficial to AK here.
Well, can we talk about Lockie? Because Lockie is the kind of character I think is like so brilliant in hindsight, especially. Like, you talk about, like, does he still care? I'm just like picturing Lockie losing the car award to Michelle, and like every time he's like, oh, I was 5 seconds away, I was 4 seconds away, like he kept going, like he could not let it go. So I'm wondering how he's gonna let go like his rivalry with AK. Like, obviously AK didn't vote him out or anything like that, because AK got screwed, but AK and Lockie, they really did butt heads, and then they had this like really like personal kind of dislike for each other. I don't know how much that changes in like 2 to 3 years. But what Lockie is known for, being AK's foil, is the first thing I have. Yeah, you know, head of the group that AK took down. But then he, like, AK got voted out, swap screwed, and then Lockie really went on to kind of bond with Henry and make a run in the game. And I think he did start to grasp like a lot of the strategy. And while he is like the competitive challenge beast alpha male, like, I think that if you just maintain that one thing, you will be a complete dinosaur in the season. Whereas like, Lockie is the one of those people where I think like, maybe he can kind of catch on to this.
Yeah, I actually feel weirdly good about Locke going into this season. He was somebody who I appreciated as a character from season two, so I'm really happy he's back. Also, he was butt naked in season two, so I'm hoping for more of that in All Stars. A girl can dream.
There's a lot of like All Star butts I think we've seen. It's going to be the most butt heavy season that I think we've ever had. That's my prediction going into it. We will see more butts than ever before.
Yes. You have to bring back the John's butt meme here in All Stars.
The meme, for sure. Everyone's butt is a John's butt. It's a like a universal concept. Yeah.
They'll each apply to something else. Anyway, you'll figure it out. he's so strong. I can't imagine anybody really getting rid of him early on because these challenges are so freaking physical. Having Locke on your tribe is, I just can't imagine sitting there and giving that up, not having him. So I think he'll be okay early. I think if he's able to sort of slide into an alpha male role or even a, you know, perceived alpha male role, if one of the, I don't know, snakes is able to sort of use him as the meat shield, he's the face of the alliance, but, you know, someone else is really sort of running the string or pulling the strings behind behind him. I think that that could be something that would be beneficial. I don't know if Locke could win the season, but I think he'll make a deep run.
Yeah, that's exactly what I have for him. Like, I don't think he's good enough at the game to win an All-Star season. Like, I think you probably have to be better at Survivor. Not saying that he's bad, but it's like, I think you have to be pretty, really, really good at Survivor by this point. But he's definitely not going early. I think he's going to make a really deep run. And yeah, I think that he could kind of get into the strategy. You know, one of my favorite Locke moments, I watched it again last night to try and like see if it holds up and if it's as funny as I remembered. And like, I just find it so funny. So like after the Jared vote, someone had flipped and they didn't know if it was, I think, Locke or Annalise. So they're like, who was the other vote? And Lockie's like, not me. Just like completely lies to their faces, which is like a ballsy thing to do. Like, you don't see people just often just like lie straight to your face. And they're like, who was it? And he just does this like exaggerated shrug, like, I don't know. And I always found that so funny because it's like, this is the bro-y guy, but like not a lot of players will just outright lie to your face and they were confused about it. So if you can do stuff like that and no one's going to remember that he's the kind of player who did eventually start playing the strategic game, he could maybe like do some cool little things. I love that part of Locke's game. It's so funny to me.
Well, and I think just like you said, he comes across as so straightforward. Like, he could never be possible. It wouldn't be possible for him to do anything like that. And so if he can sort of use that in his favor, that could be really entertaining and might help him make it deeper.
Yeah, like if someone like AK is lying in your face, you probably doubt it just by being AK. But like Locke, I just don't think they expected him to just lie straight to their faces. Such a good moment. I don't know if anyone likes that moment except for me, but just to just shrug and be like, I don't know, like to lie about your vote, I think is a crazy thing. So yeah, I think we both agree deep run, but wouldn't make him a winner pick.
Agreed.
All right, let's talk about another alpha player with a lot more strategy, and that is Henry Van Hen, who is known for being a bombastic, but I think ultimately good player and an amazing character. Here's just like some examples of what Henry was doing on his first season, which make me call him bombastic. He switched tribes for questionable reasons, but didn't have to. He volunteered, and thus he doomed his allies to being in a numbers disadvantage, and his main ally immediately went home. He pretended to be a yoga instructor. It was kind of like how you lie about your career, which I never think anyone should do anyway, defensively. Like, I had Jackie from season 3 on the podcast last year, and she was like, as a poker player who lied about her career, I still don't think it was worth it. And that's as a poker player. He was like a tradie who pretended to be a yoga instructor to kind of shift like the narrative of who he was. But like, you know, all of these things he has explained after the fact, and I get it, but I still don't agree. He threw challenges by himself. He attempted to. He was voted out with an idol in his pocket. He kind of reminds me of JT. It's like he has so many raw skills for the game. He's charming. He's great at challenges. Like, he's charismatic. All of those things. And then he kind of does things where you're like, JT, Henry, what are you doing? Like, what's happening right now? So, yeah, what are your thoughts on Henry?
Yeah, Henry is somebody who is so incredibly chaotic. Just there's so much energy and there's so much power there. And if he could just harness it, I still, when he volunteered to leave the tribe, leaving Jackie, I was baffled, absolutely baffled by that strategic decision. I don't know if we're going to see anything different from Henry this season, because I think the way that he perceives his own moves, he thinks that they were correct. And so because there's no sort of revision on, ooh, maybe that wasn't a great idea, maybe I should try something else, I think he's going to come in and play a very similar bombastic game that is going to be all over the place. I don't know what exactly that is going to be. I don't know if he's going to be throwing more challenges or giving more useless idle clues to people, you know, who knows. But I think based on the fact that he was voted out with an idol in his pocket, I think he feels like he has something to prove, and I think he feels like the way to do that is to play even more chaotically.
Yeah, in terms of, I think he was the right move, like volunteering to switch tribes, like the way I think he explained that was, at a point we're going to get swapped, I don't want to get swapped screwed, which AK eventually was, so I'll just volunteer to go make new connections, and then I'm in control of all my own relationships, which, like, I see parts of that, but it also did doom Jackie to being in a numbers disadvantage, and she did immediately go home, so I still kind of feel like the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. Like, I mean, you're swapping to be on the other tribe, so you think you can make those connections. So it's like, just wait until you maybe get swap screwed and then just be charismatic then and hope that, you know, at that point you can make relationships without having to volunteer. So I agree. I do think that he doesn't, like, he still agrees with his moves. And I've, like, even had conversations with him about, like, the way you play Australian Survivor. Like, everyone knows I think that you should be a little conservative, be a little beta. Maybe All Stars will kind of change that. But that's how I see to play the game. It's such a long game. Whereas I feel like Henry wants to play it in a really big way. And, like, to his credit, he probably also just wants to have that experience of it. Like, the last time that he played, he had just, you know, lost his mom to cancer, I think a few weeks before. So I don't think he kind of wanted to come out there and sit on his hands. And I don't really know if he's capable of doing that. You kind of you have to be who you are. And this is who Henry is. I think, you know, chaotic is a great word to describe it. But if you can rein the chaos in a little, like, just be chaotic from the merge and then just pull it all out. But at the beginning, there's no reason really for him to do that. Like, he's super physical, he's a good shield, like, he's a threat, as we've said, who's a shield. Like, he could do well, I think he has a lot of connections in the community, like, he could do well kind of doing nothing. So it's like, how much can he rein himself in?
Mm-hmm. Maybe that whole fake it till you make it mentality might work out for him here. Like, he's faked being a yoga teacher long enough that maybe he'll get zen somehow and actually calm down. But I could see him.
He could use some yoga. That's the most ironic part of all of this.
Yeah.
He could really, like, use some yoga, some real yoga.
Actual yoga. Yes. Not whatever weird stretching he was trying to lead people in season two.
Exactly.
You know, he is the type of player that if you are, you know, someone like, I don't know, Nick or AK, and Henry's sort of the other perceived snake potentially, you just be like, no, look how crazy this guy is. Like, no, focus on him. You definitely want to take him out before you take me out. But he also has that strong relationship with Lockie. And so I think that that is going to be advantageous for him.
I think he has relationships all around. But, you know, even with all the crazy stuff he was pulling last season, like, I don't really remember him being in extreme danger until he went home. Like, yes, his allies became extreme collateral damage, but it's like he was in charge of a Sangha until he swapped, and then he did kind of get in there and people did really like him, and you know, they didn't really go to tribal a lot, but he did kind of make it work. So as someone who's that social and that physical, like, I do think he has a lot of time to work his magic. And then it's about just, like, you know, he has a lot of ideas. And it's just like picking the few really good ideas and going with those ideas later in the game and making a run for it. I still think it'll be too big a threat, but I think that would be his best pathway to the end.
Yeah, that's very much the JT, right? So he needs the Steven to his JT to, like, help pick what are the good ideas that we should go with. And what are the things that really need to be left on the cutting room, bamboo cutting room floor?
Exactly. And I would say, like, the ideas in the beginning are no ideas. And then, you know, you kind of start ramping it up. But don't do everything that comes to mind. Like, just pick the one. Go with that.
Focus on the yoga, the games on the beach, you know, to entertain your tribe. Like, do that early on. Just focus on that.
I see a similar placement for Henry. Like, I do think that he's kind of long for the game, but I think, like, kind of around that early to mid-merge time, you're going to take him out as a threat. At that point, it's like, how much of a headache has he been? How much chaos is he causing? Everyone can kind of agree that someone like Henry needs to go at that point. So I would kind of put him in a similar place.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. If like last season, sort of the chaos that he created was actually more collateral damage to all of his allies, it could go deep. But if his chaos ends up coming back to him more immediately, he could be out even earlier. And I don't necessarily see him winning. Sorry, Henry.
Yeah, but he's so good at the game. If he could just come out and be super different, I just don't have any indication that he would do that. Like, we'll talk about Harry. Harry is someone who invented a child and then was like, it blew up in his face. And like, the way that Harry kind of looks at the game now is like so different. I wish kind of Henry was coming back with, I don't think he's coming back with that same mentality where it's like, okay, I tried that. It kind of went poorly for me. And now I'm going to kind of rein it back and remember that, like, I'm a social person, I'm a likable person, and that's the person I'm going to be on the show. So if I knew he was coming in with that mentality, which I think someone like Harry does, I would be like, mm-hmm. Oh, he's so good at the game with those raw skills. Like, he'll do super well. I just don't know if his mentality has shifted.
Well, I think that's actually a really important skill, the ability to have self-reflection and be able to accurately assess what happened to you in the past. Because if you continue to believe that, a situation turned out differently or you're not able to read it properly, you can never learn. And I think that from season to season, that's really important. It's also important within a season, because if you are able to sort of have a second chance or something, you know, you need to be able to learn from the mistakes that you make and the people that you're playing with, because everybody responds and reacts differently. And I don't think Henry necessarily has that one quality. I think if he had that, he would be a much more deadly game player.
Yeah, I think if he had been punished more for his decisions, he did skate by on them and other people were punished. Like, if he swap himself and then gets immediately voted out, he probably is like, ugh, not doing that again. But it's like, look, Jackie got voted out, unfortunate. But he went on to be in the game for so much longer that I feel like, you know, the only thing he's really guilty of is being completely blindsided with an idol in his pocket. But he wasn't, like, punished for pretending to be a yoga teacher. Like, these things may have made it more difficult, but they can kind of be isolated from what was his eventual demise in the game. So it's harder to have that self-reflection, but I still think he should have it. And I still hope that there's a little bit of that coming into All Stars.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know about that, but we can hope.
Yeah, I mean, Harry wasn't, you know, he wasn't voted out because of Oscar at all, you know, and he still has that self-reflection, which is a really impressive quality. Like, it's a difficult thing to do, but you got to do it.
Well, you know, they say having a fake child changes you, so...
Ah, so true. Okay, well, let's get to the last player we have of season two, which is Tarzan, which I guess, like, some people might be a bit surprised to see back. He was only in 4 episodes. You know, back is one of the main people who've been announced. Like, you know, I basically played as much Survivor as him. So he's kind of known for being the hero. He took wood where Jericho took cookies, and that, I think, is, like, such a huge duality. Like, they were both offered this... moral dilemma, and Jericho took cookies, which became this really strategic thing, which he kind of like ran his whole winning game on, and Tarzan took wood because that's what a hero would do, and then was like voted out shortly after. And that, to me, is like the, you know, that's where the paths kind of converge. So that's an interesting thing. He gave up his idol to Tessa so she could kind of like survive on. Thank you so much for that, Tarzan. And then he went home, and he's kind of our Rupert. That's, I think, how we see him. Rupert, who barely played.
That's what I've written down. I have Rupert ish because that's exactly who I think of. Also, didn't he get dysentery or something after he got home?
Did he?
Something crazy. I don't know why I have that as something in my mind when I think of Tarzan, but I do.
What?
Although look.
Okay, well, I didn't get dysentery. Maybe he has played a lot more Survivor than I think.
I don't know. Maybe it's, is it related? I don't know. Maybe I made that up. I think it's real, though.
why don't you just Google Tarzan dysentery? What a Google Tarzan search that'll be.
Yeah, I think we maybe need to be more specific. I think when I think of Tarzan, I think about the moral dilemma, like you said, for sure. If only he had been able to use the wood in the same way that Jericho had used the cookies and create the firewood alliance.
Oh my God, I just Googled Tarzan dysentery and he literally did also get dysentery. And it's the first hit on Google when you Google Tarzan dysentery.
Oh, so, okay. Good to know.
It's actually like the only thing that's coming up. What else would come up?
About. Yeah, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've seen the Tarzan movie. Maybe there was a subplot there I'm not aware of.
Like, but... in a 1963 Tarzan movie, something was to do with dysentery as well.
Ah, so perhaps,
the more
yeah.
You
so
know.
Tarzan's out here playing the Oregon Trail.
Same. How awful.
I mean, the fact that he is just completely selfless, I suppose, in terms of moral dilemma, getting wood for the tribe, going out and finding the idol, giving it to Tessa, all of that sort of, you know, mateship Rupert-ish nonsense, I think is something that, you know, he's definitely going to be out here working, because I don't imagine Tarzan approaching this game any differently. What I will say is, because we have such so many game players, he could easily be the type of person that just slides into an alliance. He's trustworthy. He's loyal. No one's ever going to vote him out. And he makes it deep because he just is so loyal. And in a game full of disloyal people, those few that are truly loyal, you want to hang on to. So I don't think Tarzan could. Well, I don't know. Maybe Tarzan could win.
No.
But I don't know. I think he's going to make a deep run, but I think it'll be more in a goat type situation.
Yeah, I could totally see that. You know, I think he's going to be a dinosaur based on like where we're at with the game, having played so much less of it than a lot of other players. And I can't see him evolving the way that someone like, I think like a Lockie could evolve. Like, I think that there's no way he can pick up some of the skills. Like, he's playing against someone like a David. Like, think about how many levels above someone like that is. I genuinely don't even know how he will cope with that, but I totally agree. It's like, why would you get rid of him? He's super strong in terms of, like, strength-based challenges, which is, like, the only physical component I'm really considering. Then he gets past that phase of the game, and it's like, when will you ever get rid of him? It's kind of like John from last season. You know, mm-hmm. likable enough, physical, and the way John went home last season was that he... You know, it was kind of just like by default in terms of them not wanting to get like the play wrong from an idol perspective. That's kind of like how I can see from Tarzan. It's like, if you're going to go home, it'll probably be like only by default, or like, why would anyone ever get rid of you?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's not like he's an individual immunity threat. He's not going to make any crazy strategic moves against you. He's not going to lead the charge against anybody. So I see no reason why you would ever vote Tarzan out. Exactly.
One reason may be like he's like no reason. There's one. Like, well, he just might be a little bit out of it socially. Like, it's quite a young group. He's a bit older. Like, in terms of looking at like that other thing, he might have mm-hmm. a bit of that. But I still think, like, why would you waste a vote on it? I don't think these game yeah. players are going to be wasting a vote on Tarzan.
He wanted to get rid of Lockie, right? So maybe Lockie's like...
Lockie's on the vendetta tour.
Exactly. This is Lockie's chance to get out anybody who ever targeted him. Tarzan could make that short list. But yeah, otherwise, I just don't see anybody saying we have to get him out. I mean... The winner other is still so much bigger, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's the second other, potentially. But I think we could see a deep run from Tarzan here.
He was quite paternalistic with, like, a Tessa. So can he kind of get in mm-hmm. where he's like, look, he's not the same demographic as everyone else, but he kind of finds his niche as, like, the grandpa or the dad of the group. And they kind of just right. keep him around, again, because, like, why not? And he's not bothering yeah. anyone, and he sometimes will bring wood back. And you know, if he's ever given a cookies versus wood, he's doing it for the tribe. Like, I know he's like, oh, this is all stars. Like, Tarzan's probably not changing his game. Imagine if Tarzan came out and was just like this, like, super strategic, like, force. I can't see it.
Yeah, I think, you know, even if he digs out a shelter underground on the beach, I just can't imagine him doing that. But that would be pretty crazy. Like, idol over here, idol over there. Like, yeah. Watch me. 3-2-1-4-5-8 vote split. Like, let's go.
Rupert did get to a point where he, you know, put the rock in his pocket to act like a fake idol, which was a pretty impressive play. That was after, like, 80 days of gameplay at least. Tarzan's had a lot less than that, and I don't ever think he's gonna get to rock in a pocket level. Like, I actually think, like, he's below Rupert in that, so that's not a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, sorry Tarzan.
Oi, Tarzan, our number one listener. Let's move to season 3, where we have a couple of people.
Well, Shannon, you know, if he is now into all the strategy, he's tuning in. He's like, why is there not a Y blank lost for Australian Survivor? He needs to know all the deets.
He's yelling, I did get dysentery. You know when people on a podcast are like talking about yeah. something and you have the information? So glad we Googled that and gave everyone the information they needed to know. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom? Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. All right, Shane Gould. We've spoken about kind of in the Jericho thing, what she's known for is winning. People not effing with her. You don't eff with Shane Gould. She had some strategic acumen, like, for example, the Lydia vote is a big one. She worked with Sean at, like, some important points through the merge, but I definitely put Sean as kind of the leader of that duo. And then there was some ridiculousness, like the idol hunt. Didn't she have, like, a long-term... Was it a farting storyline? Was that... That was a crazy thing, Edgically, to put in for the winner.
Yeah, very, very bizarre.
Yeah, so Shane Gould is an enigma, I think. And we're not high on her chances, are we?
No, you know, you talk about Tarzan having the other because he's older, talk about Jericho having the other because he's a winner. Well, unfortunately for Shane, she's got both. And I think that combination really isn't in her favor here. I mean, I don't know if you're Shane and you can try to go back and be like, oh, I'm loyal and play the loyalty card and maybe somebody would keep you around for that. But I really think that the winner target is going to be so incredibly large for both her and Jericho. I don't know how she's going to shake it.
Yeah. And then it's like, again, she's not helping so much in the tribe challenges, which are largely strength based. It's kind of like Tina in All Stars, except she's like older and a more recent winner. And with fewer winners in the cast. So it's like every part of it is worse. And she beat so many of these people that are playing. And there's still going to be that tall poppy syndrome, I think. I mean, definitely, like, she has connections to the people she played with. But A, are they happy with her? And B, of all the people in the cast, like, does she know anyone else outside of her season? Is she, like, at fan events? Is she in people's DMs? Like, I don't think so.
She pre-gamed.
Yeah. Imagine getting a DM from Shane Gould. Imagine being at that point in your life where you get that. But yeah, tough one for her. Like, I think every tribal council that she survives is like a victory. Like, that will impress me so much if she gets through, because I just don't see, like, in terms of the Jericons, because we have to call them that because we don't have a Shane pun. I don't see a pro. I don't see a pro to keeping her, other than she doesn't even feel like a shield. So what is the pro? Find me one pro about Shane Gould right now.
Well, according to some of the promos I saw, she studied chimp politics.
Okay. That's the pro we're going with.
I don't know.
And are there chimps on the season this time? the 10 players they haven't revealed are all chimps.
They're actually chimps. That is the twist of this season. Playing with chimps. Shocking. Yes. Assuming that she can equate, because it's jungle politics, I believe is how she described it. Sorry, Shane. I don't know how beneficial that's going to be. Although maybe if they are chimps, the other 10 players, she can sort of rally them. And then she's got an alliance of 11. And that's pretty dominant in this season.
I love that. She's like leading the chimps. That is incredible. How can someone who won the game think that would be helpful? Shane, you it's not like you're like a newbie, like you played 50 days, you won. How can you think that studying chimp politics would be anything you would possibly need? I can't believe chimp politics was your pro, by the way.
That's the only thing in my pro column. Yeah, I don't know. She's a regular Jane Goodall over here.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. We'll figure it out. Honestly, my pro column is even shorter than Jericho's, and that is not very long, as we know. So sorry, Shane.
Yeah, I imagine Shane Gould just like preparing, and she has a whiteboard, and she's like writing things down, and just in big text is like chimps ? Like, why chimps?
Why chimps?
Okay, well, I would put chimp politics probably in the Jericho's column. Mm. So I don't see a pro. I don't see one pro. Other than, I've had a while to think about it.
Yeah, I got excited for a sec. I really think the only thing that I can think of is if she can come to, I don't know, people like Matt Rogers and Lydia or something and just be like, I'm with you guys. I'm with you guys. I'm loyal. I'm with you guys. And if that can help her get a little bit further in the game, maybe people start to forget about her. Like the aura of being a winner starts to fade away as you're further from Shane and Jericho showing up on a flatbed truck. She's more integrated in with everybody else. Maybe, maybe that's a way that she could go further. But otherwise, I think she'll be out pretty early.
She does have people on the cast who like voted for her to win. Like maybe she's more connected to the season three people than we think, and they'll kind of want to protect her. But again, like, why? Like, she's not helping you in challenges. She's not a shield. Like, why would you stick your neck out for her?
Yeah, having
a lot of issues finding a pro, and I think you are too, because the chin politics thing did not compute.
Keeping that in my pro column.
Yeah. Listeners, you let us know if you think studying chin politics is a pro. She could have been doing anything else. Like, that's a waste of time. Like, that's legitimately a con.
Like, let's make a list of the 15,000 other things you should study before chimp politics when you're going into Survivor. Fire making, plants that you can eat in Fiji. Regular human politics, yes, might also be a great place to start. But who knows?
Look, if the other 10 players are chimps, her foresight is out of this world and she will win the game. You. So she's just banking on some of the players being chimps. And honestly, that might have been her best shot. So maybe it is a pro. Okay, Lydia, one of the players who's not a chimp, is back. I think we spoke about it at the end of season three where we were like, they asked Lydia a lot of questions at the reunion. She's definitely being asked back. Why is she going to be asked back? Like, she's an Olympian. She's possibly the best challenge competitor in the history of the Australian game. Maybe definitely the best challenge competitor in the history of the game. Like, she's an absolute beast. She was blindsided by her former champions, actually notably Shane Gould and Matt Rogers. She's not necessarily a high-key strategist. Like, while I do appreciate that you got to bring other things to the game and the best challenge competitor ever, maybe one of those things, like, I don't really feel like she popped as a character. So I feel like there are other challenge beasts you could get who aren't kind of so dull.
Yeah, this was one of those choices where when I first heard her name, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then I started thinking about it and I was like, does it? Does it really make sense? I think it's mainly just because she's an Olympian. She's so strong. She's such an amazing challenge competitor that I think in the minds of those who are making the decisions of who should return probably outweighs a lot of the other things. But when I look back on her season, like you said, she wasn't really a big character. You know, what do I know about her other than she's a challenge beast, a workhorse, and an Olympian?
She's not a champ.
She's not a chimp. She was the merge boot. Mm-hmm. She worked closely with Matt Rogers. Like, I'm really grasping at other things about her. So I'm hoping that there's more to it. There's more depth to her character and that we'll get to see more of her on this season. But just based on what I know, I mean, I assume she's going to come in and play similarly. Challenge beast, workhorse, probably go out as the merge boot.
Yes, I have the exact same thing. I see her going right, either right at the merge, the exact same spot, or maybe right before the merge, because All Stars kind of, you know to get a jump on it and be a couple of steps ahead. But it's like, you can't lose her early. You can't let her stay around to dominate physical challenges, even if she's not like a massive strategic threat. She doesn't have enough social strategic skills, I think, to kind of stop that inevitable demise. So I kind of just see it right in that middle game, kind of like the opposite of a parabola or flipped upside down. I don't know why I went with a math science thing, but that's what.
Yeah, I like that was your choice. Yeah, so for her, the peak of, or I guess, yeah, where she's most likely
is
the middle of the game. Yes. So is where she's most likely to be voted out. Least likely to be first, but also least likely to be the winner. I think that's probably a safe place for her. And it is going to be interesting to see how her relationship with Matt Rogers either helps or hurts her in the game, because you know who else is Lydia really connected to?
I mean season three, we can't really talk about all the other players, but season three to me is so congested. Like, there's a lot of players from season three and from season two as well, but season two, like, there's more pre-merges, some people who didn't necessarily even play together, and there's some fewer people from the other seasons. So season three is a web. It's like a very tangled web with some people who kind of hurt each other but are also very close on the outside, pretty much all of whom played together. Very, very congested for season three. I wonder how that will play out as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, though, for her, in terms of the strength of those connections, I think she's intertwined in a lot of these connections. When I look at some of the other players, I think that there are stronger bonds potentially that could be here. But I mean, she was turned on by Matt Rogers, you know, by Shane, I think also was somebody who voted her out. And so, you know, I don't know if she takes the Lockie approach here. She could be coming out guns a blazing, but I just have a feeling like she's going to rely on those relationships that she had previously and probably come in with a similar strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I think she has one of, if not the tightest connection in the game with someone I can't discuss because they haven't been announced from a just a personal friendship standpoint. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, yeah, how connected is she to the season one people? Did she watch that season? I don't know. We're assuming a lot about Lydia. Maybe she is like a super fan now. Maybe she's been studying shim politics. Maybe she's been studying the game. I don't know, but I just don't know how Lydia stops the inevitable train that's heading at her, which is like, you are the best physical competitor in the season, particularly for individual challenges, which are like, you know, you would think a lot of balance and endurance. So tough one for Lydia, I think, to win. But well, I think we'll see her for a while.
I mean, if she can go on an immunity run at the end, you know, maybe that's how she gets there.
I don't think she'll get the chance. I think that like, she'd have to go on an immunity run from like pretty much the first part of the merge, if not like very, very beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
Tough one. We spoke a little bit about Matt Rogers. So let's get into Matt Rogers. He is known for being the godfather. He ran the game completely until he was absolutely blindsided with an idol in his pocket, something that was true of a couple of these players we're going to talk about. He ruled the game with an iron fist, and the way he kind of like took some people out was actually kind of scary. Like the way he took out Sam, which I think, you know, from memory, was the reason was that Sam like dared to tell Lydia to kind of cool it with the challenge stuff because she was becoming such a threat. That is like such a minor thing to do. And Matt just like, you know, Sam was like a protege to him, and Matt just like put the hammer down and took him out like immediately. Like he left everyone running scared. There was no real nuance to it. Like he just basically ran the game, thought he had it on lock. He would do like really big ballsy things, like just inviting people that he wanted to work with on reward rather than his allies and being like, I now work with everyone. And kind of people did see through that. And that's why he did get blindsided. But I'm pretty sure he won the Danzy, which is now the Chile of that year, because he really did control most of that game.
He did so much work in that game. And I think the Godfather is an apt title for him based on looking back at what transpired in that season, because, I mean, he was aggressive too. Loyal but aggressive. It's just sort of a weird place to be in, because I think he perceived himself to be loyal, but yet when somebody who like Sam, who was in his close circle, there was any type of threat to him, it was sort of immediately like nip it in the bud, shutting it down, shut it down. And that is a very interesting style of gameplay. And I don't know if it's something that he could recreate, because I think you're going into a champions tribe. This is the first champions versus contenders. I think he was able to really take stronghold early on and then just kind of ride that out. I mean, but it ultimately resulted in his downfall. So whether or not we're going to see a different style of gameplay, I don't know, because I don't know if he can do this again.
Yeah, well, he was never on the bottom until he was literally out the door, right? Like as soon as he was on the bottom, he'd been voted out. Like he was so badly, you know, he was so badly blindsided. Like I look at the way that he plays the game, and I say this with love because I think Matt Rogers is a really good player and a really interesting character, but like he felt a little entitled to what he felt the game owed him. You know, it was like no one could speak out against him in any way, but he was the one voting out Lydia and Jackie and eventually, you know, Sam and all these champions for the like the most minor things, even for nothing, you know, for someone like for Lydia was mostly a challenge thing. So, and then, you know, the way that it went down where he voted for Shane over Sean because Sean hadn't protected him when he had his own idol and Sean wanted to protect him and like, she really didn't do anything wrong. Like that is, that's bitter. Like that's like that, you know, that was proper bitter. And I think he thought that like he was entitled to Sean almost like giving up her game to protect him in some ways. Like you can play your own idol, man. So he's like extreme personality. I love the psychology of Matt Rogers. Like the fact that he didn't vote for Sean and the Sam vote, it's like really true Godfather stuff. It's really not just a name. I know there's been a lot of Godfathers, but he actually completely wears that. And I'm really interested to see how that goes with other big players when, like, he's now, like, a big fish in a big pond and he's not going to be able to maybe, like, rule it with an iron fist the whole time. Like, how does that dynamic play out?
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. If he sort of comes in with that similar strategy of, okay, I know how I'm going to play. I had a really good, you know, hold on the game. I'm going to do that again. But I, oh my gosh, I can't imagine it being possible with all of these other players that we see on the season. And so when he's faced with that adversity, how is he going to handle that? Is he going to have that sort of similar entitled attitude of like, well, you can't be doing that. That's just against the rules, you know, some artificial rules that he probably thinks exist. And that is going to be interesting to watch unfold because, I don't know, we could see some like crazy meltdown from Matt Rogers, which could be absolutely insane.
Yeah, I think, I have here that his last game was quite one-dimensional. Like, as good as it was and what he was doing was great, like in being the Godfather, he really did achieve a lot in that, but I didn't see any other sides to his game. There was no nuance to it. So I'm wondering if he can kind of adapt to maybe a more complex, fluid game of what I would assume All-Stars will be. But then again, it's like, maybe that's just not who he is as a human being. Like, we're asking him to kind of be a little bit softer, maybe, to not really try and run the game with that much power. And I don't know if he can achieve that.
Right. How adaptable is Matt Rogers? I'm going to go with probably not that adaptable. Mm. And so when you are facing a lot of big swings, who knows how past tribal lines are going to be blurred. You know, there's not going to be a pagonging. Like, there's no freaking way anyone in the season, well, some people may allow it to happen, but there's so many players who won't allow that to happen. So to have such a stronghold on a group this season, I just don't know. Or maybe all of those players will get together. The Matt Rogers, the Brooks of the world, the people who all just want to be in one big alliance may run things. But I don't see it playing out that way. And I don't know how he's going to adapt to that.
I do think the one thing on his side is definitely time. Like, he's not going early. He's definitely really helpful in the challenges, being like a former athlete, like a lot of these people are. So I think he has time. And they will come for him eventually. And like, how will he respond? Because last time he couldn't respond. And now is he going to be more alert? Like, how does that change him?
Right. Is he going to be able to see it coming?
Yes.
I don't know. We'll see.
Wouldn't have him as a winner pick, but no. I don't see him going early.
I think he's similar to Lydia in our math trajectory.
Yeah.
Of like somewhere there in the middle.
Yes. I knew the graph was a good idea. I want to talk about, you know, get to season four and get to someone who's quite similar to Matt Rogers, which is David, who went out at a very similar time, kind of like Henry, also with an idol in his pocket, all three of these players. He was known for running the game with Luke, but he faced a lot of adversity. You know, he had to flip two tribes, his original tribe, the champions, and then the swap tribe. The popcorn reward is legendary. He is a massive character, maybe the biggest in the game's history of Australian Survivor. He swapped idols with Sean, and he made a fake idol. He played very big and often quite questionably. He was obviously turned on by his allies and voted out with an idol. But another one like Henry, where it's like, I don't know if I agree with all the decisions, but I definitely think you are a good player.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Especially with that fake idol to Sean. Like, I don't know if this is a good idea, but this is a fun idea.
Like, that was an outright bad idea. But he, you know, kind of doomed his game. Maybe he learned from that a little bit.
Yeah, maybe he has the self-reflection. I'm not sure. You'll have to remind me, in terms of the timeline, did the other players see his season air?
From what I understand, they saw to the early merge.
Okay.
Okay. So they saw popcorn reward. They saw everything he was doing in the pre-merge. I don't know if they saw him go home, but yeah, they saw a lot of David.
It would be really great if they saw the episode where he went home, like right before they went, because then maybe that takes a little bit of the pressure off.
I don't think they
otherwise,
did.
You.
But like, they know he went home, you know.
Right. Yeah. He didn't win. Right. Because otherwise he would be on that flatbed truck with Jericho and and Shane.
I love the truck, by the way. For anyone who's watched the first 6 minutes, that's the best part. They kind of have them all in these groups, and Shane and Jericho are in a group as the two winners, and it's just like the most awkward date. Like, Jericho and Shane are people who are so different from each other, but they connected by being the winners, and it's just a great date.
That's so funny. Because again, we think about, okay, how is David going to be perceived by these other players if they are going to see him as this crazy strategic? I mean, the fact that David was able to get out of the sticky situations that he was in, that was really impressive. And I would be terrified by playing with someone like that. Now, David's initial strength really came from his strong social game and being able to build the connections, because he was on, you know, the outside of that sporty alliance early on and then was able to flip and flip people to get everything going. I think he was able to learn a lot from Luke, which I think is going to be beneficial for him. He's one of the players I'm most excited to watch because I don't know what David I'm going to get. Because of sort of this, you know, immediate back to back, I think we're definitely going to see more Golden God antics. I think he's going to be out here playing the game. But whether or not it's going to be more on the, I guess, Henry chaotic side or a more productive side, that's what I don't know what I'm going to see.
Yeah. Can he pick the good ideas? You know, of all these, these people who could kind of, who did go out of the exact same spot right in the middle of the game with idols in their pocket, and we kind of predict a similar thing for Matt Rogers and for Henry, like, David is the one I can see pushing through that. Maybe it's because he was the most recently burnt, or maybe it's just, he's just like a force of nature. And I feel like through kind of like sheer willpower and charisma and ability for the game and drive, I could see him kind of like pushing through that area of the game. I don't know if he'll win, but I think he might be a little bit more like keenly aware of people, because last time he was so duped to go out with an idol. And that was only like, you know, under 2 months ago from when he's playing again. So he might kind of remember some of those signs now. And I just feel like David is the one of the three that I would put money on to just be like, he's got it. Like, he can push through this. I just think he's just like a force of nature. And I think that he can make things happen that shouldn't work, but kind of do work. And it's like, he should go home, but he doesn't. And that happens so many times. He's a little bit like a miracle worker.
Yeah, he really is a golden god.
Yeah,
when you think about everything that he's been able to get through, it's just absolutely insane. And he's somebody who sort of has this confidence that just doesn't matter. It's a powerhouse level of confidence, and you're just able to get through anything and to just be so incredibly confident that people flock to you and people are willing to work with you, and it's going to take so much for you to go out of the game. Is he going to be the person that floats to the top of the list in terms of the targets, though, because of all of that? I don't know, but he's an enigma a little bit to me, with his leather jacket thrown over his shoulder. If he comes sauntering out, I don't know if people will also take him seriously. Maybe you look at this guy and you're like, yeah, but that was a fluke. You know, he definitely can't do this. Yeah, he was with Luke. That's right. The fluke with Luke. I don't know. People are just going to see him as maybe, oh, it's just David. It's fine. Whatever. And then he's able to come in and snipe later on and win. I don't know. But I'm excited to see David play again.
In a season of all-stars of big names, I feel like David is the biggest name coming in, especially like thinking about where these people were going into the game. They were, you know, at the early merge. So that's when you were getting the ads on TV, like, David makes the season amazing. You know, it was like a couple of weeks from the popcorn reward. It was just David, very, very David heavy, especially at that time. I think David is going to be front of mind, front and center, but it doesn't matter because there's a huge physical presence. He definitely has time. And like, I don't know, he'll make it work. Like, that sounds like a really bad spot. To come in as David at that exact time sounds like a really bad spot. But he'll make it work. I don't know how yet, but I just feel that he will.
Like, somehow it'll work out. I don't know. I hope that he's able to make it deep, because not only is he a fun player, he's also just a really fun and entertaining character. And I want to watch him on my television screen. Yes. So maybe I'm thinking he'll do better than he actually will, just because I want him to be on TV longer. But who knows?
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of guy who makes every confessional so good that he had like a standard confessional about the car award that was so amazing he became an ambassador for that car brand. That is the kind of thing that the Golden God can do. It is superhuman. He cannot go home early from an entertainment perspective, but also like, oh my God, if they take out David early, then this cast have come to like play, really play, because that would be a huge move. But I just think he's long for the game, and we would all be luckier for it if that were true.
Yeah, I really hope so. If you can bottle up whatever David's essence is, I mean, of course he would be the face, the model of the essence, but I would buy that, because he is able to just do some truly amazing things.
And when I asked JLP, like, what do you think about David? On the interview, he was like, massive head. And then he said massive head a few times, which made me laugh. The next day, I got delivered from the PR a buff with like a little bit of like a, you know, like a card saying, you know, Australian Survivor 7:30 Monday. And on that card was David's massive head. And it's like, look, maybe he has such a huge head because you keep putting him as the biggest character on billboards and in other marketing materials. So can you blame the guy when you are literally putting his massive head places?
Yeah, exactly. You're just feeding this ego, okay? You know, you're part of the problem, not the solution here.
I mean, he doesn't need it, but they are doing that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love David. Like, you know, Nick's his own thing. I'm super excited for Nick. But besides Nick, David, I'm so excited for David. All right, last person that we can talk about is Harry, the ice cream man who is known for making up a child. Finding idols, struggling through a very tough pre-merge, kind of Phoebe and NAK style to a lesser degree, but it was still there. He kind of made it through, had this big rivalry with Janine, but then I feel like he settled into his game, and I've always kind of thought that Harry had like two halves of his game. He had the crazy Henry-esque pre-merge, made up a child, you know, was finding idols, just like trying really hard to get through a really difficult portion of the game. But then through the merge, like, you know, he was a social player and he almost really did win, not even by being crazy, just kind of by making alliances and having strategic acumen.
Mm-hmm. He's somebody who I really appreciated watching over the course of his season, because it was such a from Oscar, you know, the like lying about a fake kid and then having Ross call it out in front of everybody. Like, that moment is just so absolutely insane. And then to creating this rivalry with Janine, which then almost, I don't know, it almost then just sort of worked as this shield for him for a while. And then he just, like you said, just settled in, was really cool to watch. And I don't know how he tops that. I really don't. If he's going to be able to sort of pull from these different facets of his game in order to create something new, if he's able to adapt, which clearly he's been able to do, if he learned from the Oscar mistakes and can be a little bit more straightforward, I think that those are all things that could work out in his favor. The biggest concern is that if these players saw sort of the early game of Harry's, they're not going to see that second half. And so they're mm-hmm. just going to think of him as this crazy man who lied about having a child and didn't even bother to do the homework of like, how old is he and can it walk and talk yet? You know, like he didn't even have that level figured out. And I think that's going to be his perception. And I think that that's going to hang heavy over him throughout the season. If he even makes it that far.
I mean, talk about like the worst time for these people to go out, because how unbelievable does it sound to be like, okay, Harry, like, oh my God, we saw the first half of your game. You made up a kid. You were finding idols. You were like this really antagonistic player. How did the second half go? It's like, guys, I really mellowed out. I just was really social. I was a good ally. Just really made it through my social game and my likability. They'd be like, yeah. How many fake kids did you make up in the post-merge? You'd be like, I swear I got mellow. Like, it sounds so unbelievable, but it's actually true. I don't really know how much these players would have heard a lot about the season. You know, there's a few people from season four on the season who can kind of either lie or kind of corroborate stories. It's not like it's just one person. So I guess they probably have a pretty full picture of what happened, but it's not a great spot for him to go out in terms of the player's perceptions. But I do really love his new approach to the game. Really, really love the way that he played the post-merge of last season. I think it could be a good spot for him in terms of like the people he wants to work with. Cause it's like, I think it'll be a really strategic season, but he's also not like the most threatening strategist, so there might be kind of like a spot for him there. I do have some physical concerns early because he just came off filming, you know, 49 days, probably under 49 days ago from when he's starting to play, so that's a bit of a concern. But, you know, based on approach, I feel really, really positive about him.
And I think also, if somebody said, you know, as fast as you can, name the most strategic players in Australian Survivor, he's up there, but he's not one of the first ones. And I think
even
some of the people who Yeah, well, and I think some of the people who are the first ones, like AK and Phoebe, are here.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's going to work to his benefit, because it's like, oh, yeah, but like, you know, it's me. I'm Dirty Harry, but like, oh, I've just got a stick in my mouth and I'm just chilling. And, you know, and I think that having those other players will really take the target off his back, because they're bigger, at least just in terms of how people perceive them.
I agree. Like, it is kind of crazy that someone who just made up a baby in the timeline of when they're playing, like, they just saw that, and he still is, I think, not the biggest snake, not the biggest strategic threat, and I think has only gotten better at the game. So I'm excited to see that trajectory kind of improve and go on. And I think they were actually given room to do that. And I think they might, it's not underestimate him, but they might not really know who he is as a player anymore. They didn't get to see what he became as a player. They didn't get to see the second half of his game where he really, I think, did change. And I think that, you know, then he can surprise people. And how rare is that to do that in All-Stars when everyone's kind of seen everyone play? He's the one who actually might have some tricks up his sleeve because they didn't see what became like the core facets of who he became as a player.
Right, exactly. And even though, yes, there are other people that were on season four, like you mentioned, I think there's a difference between having somebody tell you versus having seen it yourself, which could be good or bad because, you know, you could make up, amp him up if you're trying to make him a target. But also, you know, it's Harry, you know, it's fine. Just based on sort of the end game and the way that he was perceived in the end game is so different than early on. And it's such a long, as you know, right, 50 days. Those early stupider moves start to fade over time and you really are remembered for what happened at the end. So that could be another thing to think about when we talk about how Harry might do in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about my winner pick, which I'm actually able to announce because they are on the cast that's been announced. Like, I wouldn't make Harry my winner pick, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised. He would be up there. He'd be in contention for me. He'd be a high draft pick for me, I think. I really, really, like, in doing that deep dive with him about season four, I just, like, loved his, like, introspection and his own, like, self-analysis. Like, that's such an important skill in the game. And he just played, so he's, like, in it. He didn't have to take a break. He's, like, pretty much playing wall-to-wall survivor, which can be bad, but it can also mean, like, you're hyped up. Like, you're already hot. You're ready to play. And in a really good, positive way for where he was when he went home, almost having won, like, one day from winning the game. He was so close, and I feel like he's going to start at the game at that level.
Well, and that skill, that self-perception, oh, so incredibly important.
Love that. Love it.
I would agree with you. I think Harry would be at the top of my board, even though he's not my winner pick either.
Maybe Shane should have been studying self-deception instead of psychology. That's another one we can put in the 1500 things before chimps that you can study to go on survival.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's ridiculous.
Well, in terms of winner pick, I had two people I was really choosing between, which was Flick and Brooke. Really hard to separate for me. In talking about it, I kind of wish I'd gone with Brooke because I think I'd forgotten how good she was until I started researching again for this podcast. But I have gone with Flick. I think no one will see her coming. I do think she has skills. I think she has almost the most room for growth of anyone. She's that parabolic thing. So I'm hoping that she's not an early boot and is kind of on the other side of that graph. But yeah, I could see it for Flick. Brooks, I think, a good pick. Harry, I think, is a good pick as well. Who do you have if they've been announced? If not, we may have to go to your Twitter for that.
Yeah, unfortunately, the player that I think
could
potentially win has not been announced yet.
Tell me offline.
But okay, yeah, I'll tell you later. I'll tell you later, girl. But yeah, Brooke and Flick, I think, are really great choices. I was thinking Brooke potentially might be a little bit ahead of Flick for me.
Yeah, regrets,
just
actually,
terms of, yeah, I mean, just thinking again, I did a lot of, okay, how is this player perceived by everybody else? And I think that is going to be a major determining factor. Now, I could be completely wrong on all of those reads, but I think that is going to be very important. I think both Flick and Brooke are somebody who are people who don't have the big threat level, but definitely have the skills. And I could see either of them winning.
I think when I was looking at it, I was like, well, Brooke is a better player, but she's also a bigger threat. So it kind of became like a pro and con thing. But in like talking about it with you and kind of researching a bit, I think I forgot how much better a player Brooke was, which we could kind of tip it. But, you know, Flick was my winner pick in her original season. Actually, all of my winner picks are back on All-Stars, three of which were announced. I don't know if anyone remembers who I had last season because that's a bit of a spoiler, but Lydia, Jericho, and Flick were my winner picks in their respective seasons. So I kind of wanted to like go back to that with Flick. I'm already having regrets about it. Anyway, it is what it is. So Liana will tweet out her winner pick, and I will tell you guys on week one. I'm sorry, this is so annoying, but please don't blame us. Please don't tweet us. We have talked about it at length. That's all we got, Liana. Thank you so much for rounding up 14 people of these casts with me, and then next week we'll get to the chimps, which is a full chimp podcast previewing the 10 chimps that they are coming to play with. What is the hashtag fittingly, I do have hashtag chimp season, hashtag butt heavy season, hashtag Jerry cons as well. Which,
oh my god, I love this Survivor twist, the rise of the planet of the chimps. Like, that's the theme of this season.
Survivor, people versus chimps. Shane Gould would crush that season. She is so prepared.
You've never seen anything like it before. Yeah, oh my god. Instead of one survivor, I don't know what Jeff Probst would say at the end.
One survivor or chimp. TBD. Yeah,
one mammal winner. I don't know.
Still better than education.
Also, that's in the grand scheme of things, when you're making your list,
still a better love story than education.
Still at the bottom. Yeah. I like butt heavy season. I really, fingers crossed, I'm hoping it's going to be a butt heavy season.
I mean, I feel like that kind of works with this podcast. Also, I have really bad handwriting, so I'm like reading my own hashtags and I'm like, what does that say? You did not write down butt heavy season, did you? But no, that is what I wrote. So hashtag butt heavy season. Ugh, we ruined the podcast.
Hopefully no one ever finds your notes. I have like a random, because I was cleaning my apartment the other day and I was throwing out a bunch of old podcast notes, and I just have like a bunch of weird stuff written down, like especially from the B&B when Mary Krakowski was on. We talked about like how to procrastinate, so I have like written down participate in unnecessary activities.
Like, put that on your wall. That means good mantra.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's the key. But yeah, thank you so much, Shannon, for having me on. This is always a lot of fun. I'm really happy to be able to talk about a lot of these players. Wish we could talk about more, but that's okay. There was one other thing I wanted to mention. So on 10play.com, you can take a quiz to figure out what type of Survivor player you are. So if anybody is interested, you can take that quiz. Spoiler alert, I took it and I got, you're a winner. Yeah. And then it has a picture of Shane. And I don't know if everybody is a winner, because Mike Bloom apparently also took the quiz and got the same picture. So maybe they're just trying to promote everybody is a winner.
So I also got winner. What I think happened is a lot of the super fans got winner probably because we've studied the game. So we probably just chose all the best answers. It's like, what would you do? Also, some of the answers were like, you know, I would use my idol strategically. I'm like, well, there's not a lot of dynamics to what I would do. But yeah, I would definitely try and use it strategically. So you just choose the best answers that make you sound the best and you will be a winner. So.
No, I love those. I loved it when it was like, make your decision based on strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
okay.
What else am I supposed to base it on? So,
Be an idiot. I'm like, no, yeah. So I think that's why a lot of us got winner, because we just chose the right answers. Like, it's meant to be more personality test, but we actually just like got an A+ in the personality test and we're all winners.
Hooray. Good job.
And then they can make an all winner season for all the people who got all winners, which apparently was the whole community, which makes me feel very unspecial. But
Brant, steal it up. Call Mike Bloom. We got a season of Shane Goulds playing against each other.
And chimps. We've really taken the chimp thing too far. So yeah, the season is starting on Monday, 7:30 in Australia. And the coverage will be happening all season long. As I kind of mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm also going to be doing another show with Luke Tokey and James Matheson, former Australian Idol host, called Talking Tribal. It's like the official Survivor After Show, which Australia hasn't had yet. So that's a fun thing to kind of pioneer. And that has a podcast feed, Talking Tribal. It's also going to be on 10play. It's going to be on social media. I hope there will be ways we can get for the internationals to watch it. I don't know yet if that will be possible. VPN's always a good thing. No one from 10 is listening to this 2 hours in, right? I really hope everyone can watch that, but I'm really excited about that. And I'm really excited to cover the whole season. But thank you so much, Liana, for being my first guest to do that.
Thank you so much. It's been so cool to watch your rise. I still can't believe, every once in a while I think about like, oh my God, Shannon's going to be doing the after show essentially for Australian Survivor All-Stars. Like, that is the coolest freaking thing on the planet. So I think that's totally awesome. I can't wait to check it out. I will, hell or high water, I will figure out a way to watch. I'm very, very excited. Excited to watch this season. Also looking forward in terms of things that I'm up to. We have the Masked Singer is going to be coming back this next week. So Puya Zanvakili and I are going to be getting together with, I can now announce, Rob Sesternino is our first guest as well, Shannon. Amazing. We're just stealing him Robin for that to the first week.
Pre-All Winners.
Before, yeah, exactly. Before All Winners starts. That was our thought as well. So we're going to have him on. And then, of course, Mike and I will be back for the B&B Win Survivor U.S. All Winners kicks off in February 12th.
Yeah, super excited for all of that. I'm going to be doing some Survivor 40 stuff as well. Survivor Global, get back together with some of the international survivors for season 40. So yeah, subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed because that's all there. And also the reality TV Hap-Ups feed has that and the B&B and also the Masked Singer stuff. Like it's a lot of me and Liana. So you should definitely be subscribed to that. Leave us a star rating. Tell your friends. What can people do at the beginning of the season to kind of get the word out? Whatever they can do. Please do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just talk to your friends, tell your neighbors, shout it from the rooftops. Just come check us out. We're a lot of fun.
Yes. And also follow us on social media at Liana Barris, at Shannon Gates. That's where you'll find all of that stuff probably getting tweeted out into the universe. So yeah, it's going to be a really fun one. Another one that I have is that there's a premiere party happening in Sydney. So the Australian Survivor premiere at the Bear Bar, kind of like near Chinatown in the city. There's going to be trivia. There's going to be a viewing party, get together with the community. I'm going to be there in Sydney that week. So I'm really excited about that. So everyone should come to that. And if you do have any other premiere parties happening anywhere else, in the rest of Australia, please let me know so I can tweet it out, or if it makes sense for a podcast, if there's ever a viewing party, I'll put it on the podcast so the community can kind of get together. But yeah, that's on Monday. How crazy that. I'm really, really excited for the season to start.
I know, it's right around the corner. And I think myself included, I have to admit, with All Winners coming up, of course, that's a thing. It's All Winners for the U.S. season. But going through this cast and even just prepping for this season, this is going to be insane. And I'm incredibly excited to watch this season play out. So I'm if it could start, today, that would be great. But I guess I'll have to wait until the third. But I will be there waiting, watching with bated breath to see what the Golden God can manage to do and see if Jericho or Shane is voted out first.
Yes, and to see Nick, hashtag I astanza as well. We are standing Nick. RHAP represent, but until then, it's going to be a big couple of months. Hashtag quit your jobs. Hashtag butt heavy season. Thank you so much, Liana, for being here again. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to the listeners, and I will see you on that week one recap. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
The adventure of a lifetime.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.